and unfortunately spoiled. Are they right?
The postman who asked you nicely to put your dogs away felt threatened enough that he had to lash out.
A postman in an England shirt reportedly booted a partially blind Shih Tzu called Elspeth, causing the dog to be put down, and half of parents support a shorter summer holiday. Is that you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Andy Burnham will become the leader of the Labour Party later, setting him up to replace Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. He'll use a speech today to promise to govern in an unashamedly Labour way, with more public control and reindustrialisation. Before even taking office, Mr Burnham is facing opposition from some Labour MPs over the potential appointment of Shabana Mahmood as Chancellor. Labour MP Rachel Maskell, who is on the left of the party, has told LBC he should look elsewhere.
I don't think Shabana Mahmood is tried and tested in that arena, and I don't think it'll be fair on her, and I don't think it'll be fair to expect her to then control the Treasury. I think it'll be far better to have people with experience in economics to be able to drive that agenda to make sure it works for all parts of the country.
President Trump has made sweeping claims of Chinese interference in the 2020 US election. Donald Trump lost that election to Joe Biden and has repeated his unproven claims that it has been rigged against him. In an address to the nation overnight, Mr. Trump said the US government will release files showing that China hacked millions of voter data.
The People's Republic of China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history, resulting in China's illicit acquisition of 220 million U.S. voter files. That information includes names, addresses, phone numbers.
Opposition Democrats claim that Mr. Trump was laying the groundwork to interfere with the upcoming midterm elections. China's government says it's strongly dissatisfied with the decision to nationalise British Steel. Ministers here say taking the loss-making firm into public hands from the Chinese firm Jingye will protect jobs, but China's Ministry of Commerce says the move has dealt a severe blow to Chinese investment in the UK. Children under 16 will be banned from buying high-caffeine energy drinks in England. Under the government plans, drinks containing more than 150 milligrams of caffeine per litre will be made illegal to sell to young people. The legislation, first proposed last year, is due to come into force next April. And a major part of Glasgow city centre is to reopen later after a large fire destroyed a building next to Scotland's busiest railway station. Road closures have caused disruption around Union Street since March. The full reopening of Central Station comes nearly a week before the start of the Commonwealth Games in the city. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,572. It closed up 56 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunshine for many. Some showers in the south of England later. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Summer. The kids are home, and after a long hot day, you just want to relax with the show that everyone's talking about. So flex your EE TV to include Netflix. Cool down with chilling thrillers like I Will Find You, or laugh along with brand new comedies including The Hawk. Because when you flex your EE TV to include Netflix, you can watch your way and catch all the summer hits. It's TV with the ultimate flex.
EE TV requires EE broadband. 24-month contracts. Content may vary. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 3 minutes past seven on Friday, July the 17th. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick. And for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC, hope we find you very well. Coming up,
we should use visa sanctions and cut overseas aid. And we should do that not just to Pakistan, but any country that doesn't take back its own citizens.
Britain should look at itself and take responsibility for the Rochdale grooming gang leader, a senior Pakistani government official has said. As it's revealed this morning, we've just handed over £153 million in foreign aid. Do we need to take responsibility for his crimes? Do we need to cut foreign aid to Pakistan? Also,
and the wait and the pain goes on for English football.
The calls for Tuchel out are getting louder as FIFA says it's looking into the Falklands flag raising of the Argies. Details shortly. And
there's an opportunity for Labour to prove why supporting Labour means more delivery on rights for renters and rights for workers.
Sir Sadiq Khan ascends to the Lords. Keir Starmer is to make the Mayor of London appear. Does that mean that Khan might be heading into government shortly?
Call 0345 60 60 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. First this hour,
we are going to have to work quite hard to make sure we can pay our way. At some point, that might be having to ask for a little more.
Talking of going into government shortly. Later today, Andy Burnham will be confirmed as the new leader of the Labour Party, before then, on Monday, becoming the new Prime Minister. As he takes the highest office in the land, he has maintained a monk-like vow of silence about his cabinet picks. But the strong rumours that we picked up throughout the papers yesterday and continue through today is that Shabana Mahmood is going to be the new Chancellor. A decision which seems to have caused a degree of meltdown in parts of the Labour Party, even though it's believed that Shabana Mahmood agrees with policies like increasing the top rate of tax from 45p in the pound to 50p in the pound. This, of course, as Andy Burnham tells Gary Lineker, that we might need to tax people and ask for a little bit more. Natasha Clark is LBC's political editor. How nailed on do we think it is that Shabana Mahmood is going to take the reins of number 11? Natasha, morning.
Morning, Tom. Yes, like I say, Andy Burnham's team have not knocked down any of these rumours that Shabana Mahmood is expected to become Britain's next chancellor. They say, however, that no final decisions on these roles have been made. But as you say, today, Andy Burnham expected to become Labour leader at around midday. We're told that he will promise a distinctly Labour future and set out his vision to give back control to communities across the country. He'll say Labour must give people across Britain the hope that we can make it the best country that it can be. Last month at his economy speech, he promised good growth in every postcode.
Good growth in every British postcode. What a sea change that would be in the way UK government thinks about our own country. Seeing the positives in all places, and there are positives in all places, in all postcodes across this United Kingdom. Let's always remember that.
Today, Tom, he'll talk about his vision for a Labour programme of economic renewal. He says that means more public control, reindustrialisation and power back in the hands of local communities. We're also expecting him to pay tribute to Sir Keir Starmer for taking the party from its worst electoral defeat in a century to one of the largest election victories in our history. And of course, over the weekend, all eyes will be on who he wants to be in his top team. And like I say, all eyes on Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, for that top job as Chancellor. She has been a shadow Treasury Minister but has not had as much economic experience. Last night, the Labour MP Rachel Maskell said we don't know too much about her economic values.
I don't think Shabana Mahmood is tried and tested in that arena, and I don't think it'll be fair on her, and I don't think it'll be fair to expect her to then control the Treasury. I think it'll be far better to have people with experience in economics or in the kind of working with the department to be able to drive that agenda. And it will be about driving the Treasury to make sure it works for all parts of the country.
But back in 2014, she did argue against cutting the 50p tax rate. She said Labour should reinstate it. She said there was no justification for giving a huge tax cut to the richest in our country, saying ordinary working people had paid the price. Tom, the people I speak to say that Shabana Mahmood is definitely more left-wing economically than people give her credit for. And I think that's probably after she has worked in two right-of-centre departments. Burnham has already said he intends to stick to the government's bond rules and to the Labour 2024 manifesto, which of course ruled out rises to national insurance, income tax and VAT. Yeah. That is going to box him in. But as you say, and as that clip you played said earlier this week, Andy Burnham has raised speculation about a wealth tax, saying that he does think people may have to pay a little more in future.
So we've got the Labour leadership coronation happening today, and then Monday is the big one, Natasha.
Yes, that's right. We're expecting a new Labour Prime Minister to come on Monday. The outgoing PM will leave Number 10 mid-morning, we are told, and the new one will be in around lunchtime. And that is when the real work will begin. We'll, of course, be at Downing Street to bring you every twist and turn of history.
Natasha, thank you very much indeed. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. 9 minutes past seven, James Meadway is co-director of Verdant, a British left-wing economic think tank. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, James. Your view of Shabana Mahmood in the Treasury apparently has caused some consternation among left-wing Labour MPs. Why?
Well, partly is no one, as Rachel Maskell mentioned, no one's very clear about what she actually stands for on the economy. We've had to go back, as you've been reporting, to 2014, before anyone's got a really definite statement from her, talking about the 50p top rate tax cut, as it then was. That's 12 years ago. So basically, no one's very clear about what she's going to do. And your most obvious problem here is the Treasury is a big, important, difficult department to run. There's a massively complex job that we're facing. It's the economic challenges facing this country are huge. It would be good to have someone there who has a clear sense of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, and that way everyone else can judge them on it, frankly. At the minute, Shabana Mahmood's a bit of a blank slate.
This is all code for saying you want Ed Miliband, isn't it?
Well, I think Ed Miliband is someone who has a pretty clear idea of what he wants to do, where the country should be going, of how we might deal with some of the problems we face. But look, there are other people out there whose names have been mentioned. Yvette Cooper is someone else who's also had a lot to say about the economy over the years, somebody I personally wouldn't necessarily agree with. But she is someone who has that kind of vision, who has that sense of direction, who has some experience in working with these things. So there's a range of options there.
Yes, and names will come and names will go. But the key thing, James, is the direction of travel. So what is the direction of travel that you think the Labour Party now needs to take the country in, particularly around tax? And we're talking again, I suspect, specifically about the reinstating of the 50p top rate of tax.
I don't believe the 50p top rate is going to be coming back. I don't think dragging up a newspaper report from 12 years ago is a particularly good guide to what's going to be happening today or what this Labour Party is going to be doing. My own feeling on this is that actually the big questions we face are the institutional ones. Some of the things that have been floated, like what do you do with the Treasury itself? This is a department that is actually far too powerful inside of government, so maybe breaking that up would be a start. What do you do about the Bank of England? Something that nobody senior in the Labour Party is prepared to address, but this is an institution that's now costing us money with the way that it is conducting monetary policy. These are the big questions that need to be addressed. They're not being addressed in this sort of non-contest for the Labour leader.
James, appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. James Meadway is co-director of Verdant, a British left-wing economic think tank. Scarlett Maguire is a political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party. Thanks for coming on, Scarlett. Well, are we already seeing rows within Labour about Burnham's potential picks? I mean, starters, you mean to go on. Morning.
I think we'll always have rows within Labour. I mean, that's what Labour does, is people feel very strongly about things when nothing's happening. Certainly, people are worried that Shabana Mahmood is not going to carry out the sort of programme that Andy Burnham wants. Seriously, there is no way that Andy Burnham is going to appoint a chancellor who is not going to deliver what he wants. I mean, the chancellor is the most important person because he's going to need money.
Yes.
And so what he's looking for is somebody who's going to be quite ruthless about how she's going to raise money and how she's going to save money,
but also they have to be aligned.
And of course you look to Ed Miliband, who does actually understand the Treasury inside out,
and they have to be aligned, don't they? We've seen it before when chancellors and prime ministers fall out, and as you say, Scarlett, you know, the person inside Number 11 in effect, I think, has more of a say over the running of the country than the prime minister.
Well, yes. I mean, what we saw with Gordon Brown was that he had, I mean, he had a sort of shadow court. I mean, he had a health person, he had an environment person, an education person. Yeah. All of them were looking at the economic aspects, so that when he went in to have an argument with Tony Blair, which they did quite often, you will not be surprised to know.
No.
I mean, that he had the facts to back it up and he knew what he wanted. I mean, actually, as everybody knows, their political alignment was really quite close to each other. It was the personal that always got in the way.
Really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for your time. Scarlett Maguire, political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party. Whoever it is, Mahmood, Miliband, Cooper, you know the names. In a sense, it's less important than the direction of travel. And that, of course, will come from the personalities involved. But the direction of travel is going to be, it would seem, Andy Burnham as Prime Minister asking people to pay a bit more into the pot in order to fund whatever, whatever, whatever. But for God's sake, Mr. Burnham, as you take the Labour leadership today and as you spend the weekend thinking about how you're going to launch the first 100 days of your time as Prime Minister, please, sir, do not tax income any more than it is being taxed. I completely understand the desire from those perhaps on the left to pull the lever against the rich who might earn over £125,000 a year and increase that top rate of tax from 45p to 50p in the pound. I note here it suggests that there could also be a reduction of the threshold at which you pay the highest rate of tax from £125,000. Those people are doing okay. They're pretty well off. I mean, in context of the average salary, they're very well off. But my word, we cannot keep hitting income. If you want to talk about hitting wealthy people, there's all kinds of things you could do. There's assets, there's dividends, there's capital gains. The next Chancellor of the Exchequer cannot tax income any more than it is currently done. Even if you feel that the politics works by raising taxes on those who are paid the most from 45p in the pound to 50 in the pound, do not touch it, because I think they'll be held to pay. I think as a political move for an incoming Prime Minister and Chancellor to increase tax on work, wherever that falls, is a disaster. 03456060973. Come to your thoughts in a few moments. After the news,
it's going to be all eyes on FIFA to see how they react to this, because, of course, they should investigate. It should be a swift one, and there should be bans and sanctions.
Not that we're soft losers, but FIFA says it's looking into the Falklands flag raised by the Argentina players following the final whistle in Wednesday's World Cup semi-final. What good that will do, they'll probably just shake their hands and let them get on with it. Such as FIFA's relationship, apparently, with Argentina. We'll bring you the details of that apparent investigation after this. Tom Swarbrick on LBC 7:16. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become the leader of the Labour Party later, setting him up to replace Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. President Trump's accused China of interference in the 2020 US election, which he lost. And China's government says it's strongly dissatisfied with the decision to nationalise British Steel. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There's only one lane open in the Blackfriars underpass going westbound. It's following an accident and there are delays back past Upper Thames Street. There's been an accident outside Baker Street tube stations. So that means the Marylebone Road is closed westbound and that's also causing delays. In Hillingdon, Harlington Road is closed in both directions. That's for emergency works. And in Richmond, Petersham Road remains closed both ways following a burst water main. On the trains, the Windrush line is completely suspended. It's because of an ongoing investigation at Whitechapel, and also on London Overground, the Suffragette line can't run between Barking and Barking Riverside. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Hammersmith and City line because of a shortage of trains.
This is LBC. From Christopher Nolan.
No one could stand between me and home, not even the gods.
Critics are calling The Odyssey cinema at its most epic. It's an unmissable masterpiece. Staggering, spectacular, and soul-rattling.
Ithaca's king is coming back.
Bringing vengeance.
Bringing it all.
The Odyssey, in cinemas now. Book tickets. This is LBC.
This is my throne. My castle. Those who do not bow before me will be thrown into
all
the...
All right, Liam. Can you get off the throne and let the kids have a go?
All right.
Discover the historic southeast with kids' train tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Choose a Wix kitchen and choose peace of mind. Add the option of installation to your order and relax as Wix-approved installers fit your kitchen. Visit Wix today.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station.
Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Us kids are mesmerised by the mundane, entranced by the everyday. Where grown-ups see a snail, we see a slippery-shelled beast from the undergrowth. But around 1 in 5 young children have a sight condition that can get in the way of all that wonder. The good news is, if these are found early, they can be managed or corrected. So book your child a free eye test at Specsavers today. Find out more at specsavers.co.uk/kidstests.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
20 past 7 the time. Tom Swarbrick here this Friday morning on LBC, where we are starting what is going to be quite a quick turnaround between Andy Burnham being just, quote, just a Labour MP and him becoming Prime Minister. He's going to be crowned as the Labour leader later on today. He'll give a speech about midday, we think. And then on Monday, of course, there's going to be, well, you know the rigmarole now. Starmer will go in to see the King. Thanks very much. Cheers. Driven away. In comes Andy Burnham, driven to see the King, then to Downing Street. Thanks very much. I'm Prime Minister. What must Andy Burnham be thinking this weekend? Can you imagine sitting in the back garden of your house in your constituency or whatever, in the sunshine on a Saturday afternoon, thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to be Prime Minister here? The talk this morning is of who his Chancellor might be. Shabana Mahmood is the name that seems to have been cited as the correct one, at least from the paper's point of view. Labour MPs on the left are kicking off. They presumably want Ed Miliband to do much more, quotes, left-wing things. Although Shabana Mahmood is on the record as saying that she would agree with an increase in the top rate of tax from 45 to 50p. Surely they can't come after more tax from work. Louise is in Shotts in central Scotland. Hi, Louise.
Good morning, Tom. Happy Friday. Thanks for taking my call.
Friday. Your thoughts on Shabana Mahmood, potentially as Chancellor, potentially increasing the top rate of tax?
I mean, to be honest with you, so Andy Burnham's been voted in, actually hasn't been voted in, but he's coming in on the premise that, you know, he's going to stick to the Labour manifesto. The Labour manifesto said that they wouldn't raise taxes for working people.
Correct.
And hand on heart, that's all that seems to have happened over the past 2 years. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the current Chancellor has raised about like $60 billion in recurring revenue over the past two budgets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suppose the question is, how much more money do the government need? And what is it they're going to be spending it on, right? Because my like initial thought is like, so why don't you spend the money that you've got like a little bit better before you start coming chapping at the door of hard-working taxpayers?
Louise, you are talking my language, and I completely agree with you. And I think to an extent Andy Burnham does too. I think there is a recognition that some areas of spending have got too great. I mean, welfare in particular. That doesn't necessarily mean cutting welfare to people. It means help in a different way, perhaps. And they cannot keep coming after work, even if there would be plenty of people who say, well, if you earn 150 grand a year, you've got plenty of money. Why can't you part with a bit more?
Well, I mean, honestly, it just seems to me at the moment that if you can touch it and if you can see it, the Labour Party are going to tax it, you know? And, like, honestly, like, there is no respite, regardless of how hard you work, regardless of what salary you're on in the UK, right? It's just like you're being clobbered from every angle. And I go back to the original point, Andy Burnham, right, he's like, we might have to ask for a little bit more. Well, how much are you looking for and what is it you're going to spend the money on and how are people going to benefit from that?
I completely agree, Louise. But are you speaking in a self-interestedly because you earn a lot of money? You earn 150 grand a year or so?
I definitely do not earn anywhere near 150 grand a month. But a particular bugbear, if I can... No, sorry.
That would be fantastic.
Sorry, you can tell her Friday.
Louise is a Premier League footballer. She just didn't tell you. Yeah.
No. But anyway, so a particular bugbear, just so very quickly, right? The last budget, the Chancellor was like, we're going to ask you to pay a little bit more.
Yep.
So we're going to start taxing your pension contributions.
Yep.
from 2029. Now, bearing in mind, that's only for people that work in the private sector. Those that work in the public sector, entirely untouched. And the current public sector pension liability is £1.3 trillion.
No, it's not even worth thinking about that because it'll give you sleepless nights, honestly. Louise, I really appreciate the call. Great points you make. I agree with all of it. Thank you very much indeed. 0345 606 0973. Ali, I'll come to you in just a moment. 7:24 next.
What they did was entirely inappropriate. It was, of course, offensive.
FIFA is assessing match reports, they say, before deciding whether to punish Argentina after players celebrated their World Cup semi-final win against England with a banner in support of their country's claims to the Falkland Islands. The defending world champions obviously beat us. We don't need to go into it. And then unveiled a flag that said the Falklands are Argentina's. So Simon Jenkins is a Guardian columnist and co-author of The Battle for the Falklands, who has written a piece about this flag waving. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Sir Simon. Do you think that the Falklands can continue to remain British?
Well, they are British, and I'm not defending what the Argentinian footballers did. All I'm trying to say is that it doesn't make any sense for an island off the coast of South America to remain at war, in effect, with its adjacent mainland. And it's only because of the idiotic Argentinians invading in 1982 that we're still in this situation. Before then, this is my point, we were establishing good relations with the Argentinians. The islanders were able to go to the adjacent mainland. They were going to schools there. Mm-hmm. They were going to hospitals there. They were shopping there. Tourists were going from Argentina into the Falkland Islands. Relations between the two countries were improving. And there was at least possibility, but under UN supervision, for the question of sovereignty to be resolved and sovereignty to be transferred to the Argentinians, provided the islanders remained autonomous and were subject to protective arrangements through the UN. In other words, relations were improving in the right direction. We don't need a part of Britain to be parked off the coast of the South America. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. As it is, We've refused point blank to have anything to do with Argentina on the subject. And all I'm saying is we really should try and re-establish the relationship we had before, rather than spending £60 to £100 million defending the islands against the Argentinians, which is crazy expenditure.
What is the strategic advantage for Britain of having an overseas territory that far away?
Absolutely none.
You don't think there's anything at all?
I mean, those days just are over. It's extraordinary how Britain, every now and then, we lurch back into the imperial age when we need aircraft carriers in the South China Sea. We need bases in the Mediterranean. I mean, Germany and France didn't behave like this. It's cool. We're quite ridiculous. And why we can't just grow up? And we've grown up in Gibraltar this week. We've signed a perfectly good deal, opening up the Gibraltar border. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why English-speaking people in Gibraltar should move freely into Spain and back again. Mm-hmm. Why can't we do this for the Argentinians rather than going on about the war?
But the Falklanders would, nevertheless, if that border were removed, as it were, the Falklanders would be able to say whether or not they were British. They would have autonomy over their sovereignty.
Well, we might say the British, yes. Autonomy over their sovereignty, possibly, but when Hong Kong issue came up in the 1980s, I mean, we didn't say because the Hong Kong people would rather remain British, we're going to defy the Chinese. And we there were sensible. We said, look, this is a part of China. It makes sense. Whatever the Hong Kong people feel, it makes sense to do a deal with China, which we did do. Wasn't a terribly satisfactory one, I don't think. But in this case, it's almost as if the Isle of Wight were French. It makes no sense to have to fortify these islands as we are doing now.
Could you apply the logic over the Falklands being very far away and they're being contested to somewhere like Bermuda or BVI or any other islands that Britain lays claim to? Should there be a contested claim? Well, Bermuda's a long way away, so the Americans can have it.
Well, I mean, if everybody wanted that to happen, then I don't really see any objection to it. I don't feel a safer country or a freer country by having Bermuda as one of my colonies. But at least there, they are colonies. Yes,
well, they're not colonies. Not in that sense. I mean, they're not sort of subordinate to Britain. There are people, I've been to Bermuda, it's absolutely stunning. People are incredibly proud to be British, actually in a way that you don't find a lot of round here.
Well, it's a part of the culture of the West Indies and the former dependencies they're now called. I'm not terribly in favour of them. They're just tax avoidance places. I mean, they're not regular to my mind. It's quite different. The Falklands are miles away, and we don't have to defend the Bermuda. We have to defend the Falklands. When back in the 70s, when a Labour government did the negotiations with Argentina, the islanders were themselves persuaded this was a good idea. So it's not something that's radical or drastic. It's just that things have froze because of the stupid war. And ever since then, we haven't had the guts, frankly, to try and reopen relations with the Argentinians on behalf of the islanders.
You can read about it in The Guardian. Las Malvinas son Argentinas, not quite, but the Falklands cannot remain British forever, is the piece by Sir Simon Jenkins, The Guardian columnist. Thank you very much indeed for your time. What do you think? Argentina want it. We have negotiations with them. As Simon pointed out, you know, the hard border in Spain between Spain and Gibraltar has come down. Gibraltarians are free to go into Spain to work there, to use the facilities there. That seems perfectly reasonable, doesn't it? We could have the same deal with the Argentine government where people in the Falklands could go over there if they want and vice versa. Be okay. Should we bother to protect this island thousands of miles away? Or is that a bit of a little Englander view of the world? Because it's so far away, we can't have any say in it. 03456060973, the number. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up.
Sadly, we see too many cases, too many deaths in universities each winter at the moment.
All teenagers should be offered a free vaccine against meningitis B at the age of 15, we're now being told. Would you take it up, particularly for your teenager? We'll bring you the details of that after this. 7:30 news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become Labour leader later, paving the way for him to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. In a speech, Mr Burnham's expected to say that his government will fix the big things that politics have neglected. President Trump has made sweeping claims of Chinese interference in the 2020 US election, which he lost. In an address to the nation overnight, Mr. Trump also alleged US intelligence suppressed information about the extent of Beijing's activities. And China's government says it's strongly dissatisfied with the decision to nationalise British Steel. Yesterday, ministers said taking the loss-making firm into public hands from the Chinese firm Jingye would protect jobs. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many. Some showers in southern England by the late afternoon. A high of 30 degrees.
LBC.
You can now get Sky, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Netflix and Hey You together in one subscription. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, take your seats on your sofas, brew your cuppas and turn your phones to silent. Because the world of ultimate entertainment is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and head to sky.com to find out more.
Shh! It's starting!
Requires Sky Stream and Sky Ultimate TV subscription. Minimum broadband speed of 30 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Choose a Wix kitchen and choose peace of mind. Add the option of installation to your order and relax as Wix approved installers fit your kitchen. Visit Wix today.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12 year olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33 the time. Here's what you're saying about the potential of Shabana Mahmood as Chancellor and the possibility of an income tax rise from 45p to 50p in the pound for everyone earning over 125 grand. Here's Steve. Tom, when will you invite a patriotic millionaire on to talk tax, the ones that want to be taxed more? I've spoken to them lots of times on the Drive Time Show, Monday to Friday, 4pm, LBC. And good on that. I mean, great. If you want to pay more tax, that's fantastic. Well done, you. That's wonderful. There is a feature on the HMRC website that allows you to log on and pay whatever you want at whatever time you want. Go for it. There's your opportunity. Leave the rest of us alone. Thank you very much. I'm not averse to paying what I need to pay. I'm very happy to pay what I owe or what is felt is fair. You just cannot tax work more. There are plenty of ways of dragging more money out of people. Just not work. I see these things. Do you ever see these reels on Instagram of people who look at their phone with some lovey-dovey music over it and think and they say, oh, this is what we're doing it for. This is it. And you expect on the phone to be a picture of the kids or the family or whatever. It's a picture of HMRC. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like you're going out to work just to do it for the tax man. It's crazy. Ali, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. Let's get a business update. Kathleen Brooks is here, financial analyst and research director of the trading platform XTB. Front page of the Telegraph, Kathleen. IMF issues a spending warning to Andy Burnham. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, hi, Tom. It's hi. Very similar to what you've just said, actually. So they're telling Andy Burnham, essentially, that Britain can't afford a fresh spending binge and they need to be really selective in accommodating new demands, i.e. stop appeasing Labour backbenchers. It also cautioned that the UK is already under a historic tax burden. So stop taxing everything and think about spending cuts where they need to be. Now, they've made very specific recommendations, which includes ditching the triple lock, instead having like a kind of universal cost of living measure that pensions would go up by instead. And also urging the PM not to raise tax, like you just said, because it will actually damage the economy, that you'll actually threaten the balance mm-hmm. of the economy. It's also suggesting that we charge for some NHS services. Now, it's quite unusual for the IMF, the OECD did something really similar last week. It's unusual for them to be so granular in what they expect from the UK government.
Are they trying to run the country? Who are these people?
Who are these people? Yes. Well, you could say that, but they are obviously, you know, they're obviously based in Washington. They're a global organization. But in the past, if our debt becomes so unsustainable, they're going to be the ones that are going to bail us out.
Yeah.
And at that point, then they can impose all the spending cuts that they want. So it's better for us to listen to them now, get our public finances on a much more sustainable track. Essentially, what they're saying is that Labour hasn't done this, the Conservatives before them hasn't done this, and now things are starting to tip over into the balance whereby we might not be on a sustainable track for our finances. So we need to do this. And obviously, this comes before Andy Burnham becomes Prime Minister on Monday. He's got this big speech today where he's expected to lay out more plans for spending, potentially even some more tax. He did mention that he wants to tax us all a little bit more earlier, but those little bit mores, as we know, add up.
Yep.
So it's definitely something. I do think this is really, really unusual. There was one pro-growth measure that he might announce today, though, which could increase tax in a positive way, which would be he could actually announce North Sea oil and drilling. In the oil and gas fields out there, and a relaxation on rules for drilling new wells nearby.
That would cause some political hoo-ha, one would suspect. Talking of people butting in, the Chinese aren't very happy at British Steel being nationalised. I mean, the response might be, who cares, but...
Yeah, no, they are really... Well, they care because they own it. Well, or a Chinese company owns it, essentially. So the Jingye Group, they brought it out of bankruptcy in 2020. And yes, they're really disappointed with the government's decision to nationalise it. It does suggest that nationalisation can threaten relations, international relations. And Beijing have said that nationalisation infringes upon Jingye's legitimate rights and interests, and also undermines the confidence of other Chinese companies investing in the UK. So this is quite a big statement from Beijing.
It is, but part of the reason why British Steel was suffering was because Chinese steel was being dumped into the market at incredibly low rates. Maybe I'm being a little Englander here, Kathleen, but we should not have critical national infrastructure like steelmaking owned by companies that are legally obliged to do the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right, but I think you're 6 years too late because they bought it 6 years ago. So ultimately, when you buy something, there's private ownership rights, and China is really leaning very heavily on this. They're also trying to, you know, this is an international relations ploy by them as well, because they know that they have dumped steel. This hasn't just ruined the UK steel industry. It's ruined it all over US and Europe. But I think they're trying to just embarrass the government, actually, by saying, look, we're a communist state and we're telling you all about private ownership rights that you're going against. So, you know, essentially, yes, you're totally right. It is good to bring it under control. But, they will probably have to pay Jingyi compensation for this. Yes. So it's not cut and dry when you nationalise things.
No,
it can be very complicated.
The business secretary was on with us yesterday saying he doesn't actually know how much the nationalisation is going to cost yet because they're worried about that compensation. When the football's on, it's always slightly difficult for some of the streaming services if they don't have any sport, particularly on the World Cup. And it's been a bit of a disappointing time for Netflix.
Yes, it has. They disappointed forecasts for lower revenues, really, for the current 3 month period. The share price tumbled 9%. It's down by a fifth this year. So it doesn't provide those kind of subscriber numbers anymore. But one analyst called this a naturally maturing growth profile, which I think basically means that Netflix isn't the hot new thing anymore. But there is quite a lot.
I'll explain that. I'll use that next time my figures come in and they go down. I'll explain to my bosses that it's a naturally maturing growth profile and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, they're not doing too badly. They still managed to post $12.56 billion in revenue.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But they made some really interesting points, actually, in this report. So not only have they got lots of pressures from competition, Warner Brothers, Paramount, etc., but they're making a big push into advertising. They want it to top $3 billion a year. So it's essentially turning into a legacy TV. That was what we were meant to move away from. But streamers essentially going old school. But then it also included in these results that the use of generative AI by producers is scaling quickly. Now, what that means is that it's been used in 300 titles. So mostly in post-production, but AI is coming for Netflix.
Kathleen, really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB, 20 to 8 the time. Ali's in Warwick. You want to talk about this potential increase from 45p to 50p in income tax?
But basically, I think the 150 number is the wrong number, quite frankly. If you look at the tax burden between 100k and 125, and you're paying 15k out of that 25. So the ultimate... my dog's taking my dog lead away from me, sorry.
Oh, no. Has he run off with it?
Ben Fandango has just run off with my lead.
Fandango, what are you doing?
Great name.
Dog.
So basically, you're already a higher rate taxpayer, far higher than 50p, when you get to 100k. So the point I'd like to make is that we weren't triggering point here, where people who are prepared to work are actually going to start to opt out and go on to benefit. That is a really dangerous
thing. Well, as you wrestle your dog back, Ali, let me tell you that there won't be many people cracking the small violins out for those earning £100,000 to £125,000. You're wealthy if you earn that kind of money, they say.
I'm not saying I do, by the way. But
But
what I'm saying is, eventually, though, the
aspiration... Okay, would you say that someone earning £125,000 in this country is wealthy, by definition?
I think it depends where I live. It depends what their burden is. But it doesn't matter, really, does it? You're just killing aspiration. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think...
Labour want to equalise, but they want to equalise downwards.
If it is also true... If they would reduce the £125,000 threshold at which the highest rate of tax kicks in, I mean, I just don't know how much more people can take, really.
I totally agree. The second point I'd like to make is that they're taxing the hell out of assets that people have built out of already taxed income. And that, I think, is quite obscene. I think that's really, really unfair.
It's either income or assets. There's not much else left. And I think they've done their bit on income, so they might have to look at assets, I'm afraid. Ali, I'll let you wrestle your dog back. Thank you very much indeed for the call. 7:42 the time. Next.
It becomes an invasive infection that can then spread into the bloodstream. If you have the vaccine, you make antibodies and they can stop that happening.
All teenagers should be offered a free vaccine against meningitis B at around the age of 15, we're now being told. A change to previous advice. You'll be aware, I'm sure, of the outbreaks that there have been recently. Some of the largest and fastest growing outbreaks happened in Kent earlier this year, during which two people died. Dr. Tom Nutt is CEO of Meningitis Now. Thanks very much indeed for coming on the programme, Tom. Why do we think this advice has now changed?
Well, I think, as you said yourself, Tom, it's a result of the outbreaks we've seen this year, which have thrown into really stark focus just how devastating meningitis can be. It has been an unusual year. We've never seen anything like what we saw in Kent when two young people lost their lives and many more were hospitalised. A similar thing, but on a smaller scale in Reading. So I think, you know, taking preventative measures by introducing vaccines to protect these young lives is definitely a good thing.
Is part of the reason for these outbreaks that vaccine take-up has been lower than expected?
No, the reason for these outbreaks, and remember, these are teenagers and young adults who've been affected, is because there's actually been a gap in the vaccine schedule for some time. So, you know, we're talking about MenB meningitis at the moment, and babies have actually been vaccinated against MenB since 2015. And it's been a successful vaccine program. Disease in that age group has dropped by about 75%, but there's been this gap. And it's always felt something of an iniquity, really, that we protect babies but not teenagers and young adults. So in many ways, you could see this as kind of catching up and sort of doing the right thing by this age group.
And those, presumably, these vaccines will be offered free at the point of use on the NHS, but will cost the NHS money to do. Do we have an idea about how much?
Yeah, that's right. It's difficult to say exactly how much. This is not a cheap vaccine. You can buy it on the high street in supermarket and high street pharmacies. So we have some idea how much it costs. But of course, the government can negotiate at scale. And the other thing you have to remember is that what you're doing by preventing disease is you're offsetting the cost that then falls in other ways, not only to the NHS, but also to society and economy, and also individuals and their families. I mean, you know, this is a disease that can result in limb loss, brain injury, sensory impairments. You know, when someone gets ill, you know, it has a lifetime cost potentially. So preventing is arguably the way forward.
Tom, really appreciate your time. Thank you. Dr. Tom Nutt, CEO of Meningitis Now. Here's Stonesy, probably not John Stones, although that would be great if John Stones post-World Cup is now getting in touch to talk about Labour's tax increases, potential tax increases. Tom, don't forget that if you earn £125,000 per year, you also lose your personal allowance. So your marginal rate is therefore over 60%. I think the moment is coming where that that point at which you start paying tax, £12,500, that has to go up. It's insane that the people who are just on the state pension will shortly be paying income tax because they will earn over £12,500. That's nuts. It's completely crazy. They shouldn't be paying income tax on that. The rate at which you start paying tax, the point at which you start paying tax, it should be 20 grand minimum. But then that costs an awful lot of money and we don't seem to have any. 0345 606 0973, the number. Tom Swarbrick here. Coming up.
In my role as Mayor of London, I'll be standing up to this government. Yes, it's a Labour government. Yes, they're full of my friends, but it's not in London's interest.
Sir Sadiq Khan is to become Lord Sir Sadiq Khan. Or Sir Lord? Which way around? No, let's go Lord Sir. As Keir Starmer sends Sadiq Khan to the Lords, does that mean that he's going to be heading into a Burnham government shortly? We'll look at that in more detail. 7:46, news headlines on LBC. Here's Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will promise to be unashamedly Labour when he takes over the party leadership later. The International Monetary Fund's warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. And President Trump has accused China of interfering in the 2020 US election. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There's only one lane open in the Blackfriars Underpass westbound following an accident, and there are delays back to Upper Thames Street. There's also been an accident outside Baker Street tube stations. That means the Marylebone Road remains closed westbound, and there are queues here as well. Not looking good in Croydon, with Cherry Orchard Road being closed northbound from Leslie Grove to the Lower Addiscombe Road, and that's following an accident. So all the buses that usually go that way remain on diversion. Very slow on the A10 southbound in Enfield to Carter Hatch Lane. That's because of the ongoing works. And on the trains, no Windrush line running at all. The entire line is suspended, and it's because of an ongoing investigation at Whitechapel.
LBC.
With the MG Electric range, you get more tech at a smart cost. And that cost just got smarter with zero deposit and 0% APR across the electric range, excluding MGIM and Cyberster. Make the smart choice. Move to an electric MG. Book your test drive today at mg.co.uk. MG, Find your more. MG Motor UK are a credit broker, not a lender. PCP balloon payment required for ownership. Registered by September 30th. T's and C's at mg.co.uk.
LBC.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
In a world full of noise and uncertainty, IG is the investment platform that backs you. Forget the dubious tips from that guy down the pub. Get real-time insights, analysis and tools. No more fat cat brokers clawing your gains. Pay zero commission on your investments. Switch to a platform trusted by British investors for over 50 years. IG. Trade. Invest. Progress. Your capital's at risk. Other fees may apply.
Before you renew your private health insurance, are you sure you're getting the right cover at the right price? At The Private Healthcare Company, we compare a range of leading providers to find cover matched to your needs, with a dedicated representative who'll support you from start to finish. Search The Private Healthcare Company today and see how much you could save on your renewal. The Private Healthcare Company. Your personal, private healthcare broker.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
No! Oops, sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV licence together.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
10 to 8 the time, Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Well, when the country is looking for growth, I suspect that, well, this is growth of a kind, isn't it? I don't know how popular it's going to be. The House of Lords is going to be swelling again. The outgoing Prime Minister is making his decisions on who gets bumped up to the Lords in his so-called resignation honours. One of them is going to be Lord Sir Sadiq Khan. Does that mean he's going to be potentially put into a Burnham government? We'll get the details on that in just a moment. On the issue of the Falkland Islands, particularly after what the Argentine players were doing after the semi-final in the World Cup, and the claim that, as you heard from Sir Simon Jenkins, they can't really be British forever. Alan says this: I'm sick of people wanting Britain to be weak, giving up everything else, giving up that everything anyone else lays claim to. This is what is wrong with this country. We allow the snivelling weasels a platform. I would deport these rats, suggests Alan. Well, not to the Falklands. Do we want to spend all that money defending it? They want to be British, that's fine, but they must have a relationship with Argentina to some extent, should they not? Here's Tony. The Falkland Islands are 8,000 miles from the UK and 300 miles from Argentina. If only England had the same concern for our own borders, we've taken our eye off the ball. As our society becomes destroyed, well, I'm not sure necessarily it's becoming destroyed, but whether or not we should focus closer to home rather than worry about the integrity of the border of the Falkland Islands, maybe you're right. The investigation is continuing by FIFA. I don't know what else they need to look at. There's the evidence for you. And there's been a lot of talk over the last few days about whether or not some of these players should lose their visas when they come back to play in the Premier League. But I'll tell you what's going to happen. I mean, we vilify our own when they don't perform in the World Cup. You remember what happened to Southgate, you remember what happened to David Beckham. My God, they're going to get a rough ride when they come back, those Argentine players, aren't they? When they come back into the Premier League, I can't think. Who does Enzo Fernandez play? Is it Chelsea? He plays for Chelsea. My God, he's going to get a rough ride, even from Chelsea fans, I'd have thought, when he's back. No? On tax. And on the potential to raise the top rate of tax from 45 to 50 and potentially lower the threshold at which you start paying. Here's Beat on my daughter's freelance. When she's on a contract, she earns approximately £100,000. But due to the nature of the industry, she has to work 11 hours a day. When out of contract for 3 months at a time, she earns nothing and can claim nothing. And then there's this from the IMF on the ideas it is proposing to Andy Burnham, i.e. don't spend more, don't tax more, also suggesting that some NHS services should now be charged, particularly for higher earners. This would move Britain closer, it says, to the systems used in other countries. In Ireland, for instance, typically charging a fee for GP appointments. Is that the kind of change that this country needs? Andy Burnham, as Prime Minister, says, yep, we need to raise some money. We're not going to hit you through the tax system. But if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you now need to pay 20 quid to go and see the GP. Is that the kind of change that Britain needs in order to raise some money? I'm not so sure. We'll look at that in just a moment. 7:53. Next.
I think he's done it. I think he's
a friend of mine, right?
No, I think he's done a terrible job.
Oh, well, that's Trump's view of the job done by Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, who is now going to be, wait for it, Lord Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, one of 26 new peers to be given seats in the House of Lords in one of Keir Starmer's last acts as Prime Minister. He is going to be a Labour Lord alongside 15 others, including the broadcaster June Sarpong and the former Union Chief Christina McKenney. Professor Tim Bale is Professor of Politics at Queen Mary University of London. Thanks for coming on, Tim. I'm old enough to remember Keir Starmer railing against the idea of resignation honours from outgoing Prime Ministers. Maybe he's changed his tune.
I think he has, obviously, and it's partly because Labour is still at a disadvantage when it comes to the House of Lords. In order to, as it were, redress the balance between the Conservatives and Labour in an already overstuffed second chamber, Labour is continuing to appoint more Lords in order to try and get some kind of equality with the Conservative Party. It's not really particularly inspiring, but I'm afraid it's practical politics.
It might be practical politics, but how practical is it to have an upper chamber that is now, I think, second only to the Chinese National... I don't know. I mean, this is so huge now.
Yeah, it's over 800 now, I think, with these new appointments. It is ridiculous. I mean, clearly, in terms of physical space, there's not enough room for these people. There have been recently some moves to do something about that. So the hereditary peers have gone, although some of them have come back as appointments. It's also the case that apparently the attendance requirements are going to toughen up so that actually people have to attend or otherwise they have to leave. It's much easier now to retire from the House of Lords. So there are things that you can do, but to be honest, they are marginal. It is a really, really huge institution, which is ripe for reform. The problem is no one can ever agree on exactly what reform needs to take place.
It also means, once you're bumped into the House of Lords, that there is a chance that you could enter government because you're accountable to various Lords committees and what have you. Would you put any money, Tim, on Sir Lord Mayor Sadiq Khan becoming a member of Andy Burnham's government in some form?
I think he's got enough to do at the moment in London. Yeah. I mean, it's possible, obviously, in the long term, because as we've seen, governments do often turn to former MPs to fill ministerial vacancies. I mean, most famously, perhaps in recent years, we've had David Cameron come back as Foreign Secretary.
And there's plenty of people around Andy Burnham who are in the House of Lords already, Lord Jim O'Neill, that people like that who have served in the Treasury too.
Absolutely.
As we embark then on our seventh Prime Minister in 10 years, I think I'm right in saying seventh Prime Minister in 10 years, what do you see as the big challenge for Andy Burnham as he comes into office on Monday, when it comes to holding his party together particularly?
Well, obviously, you know, he does have to, I guess, improve relations with the PLP compared to Keir Starmer. I think he's probably likely to do a better job in that sense. I mean, he's more of a kind of communicator. I think he is quite good at building teams. But listen, the challenges for him outside of doing something about the House of Lords remain in some ways the challenges that face Keir Starmer. He has to improve the country's rate of growth.
Yep.
He has to continue improvements. And so far, they've been perhaps less impressive than some people would want in terms of public services, in particular the health service. And he has to show that the government can get a grip on the small boats crisis, unless he can do all three of those things, and in particular the first, because he needs to create some kind of feel-good factor, some sense in the electorate that the cost of living crisis is not going to be permanent, then it's going to be very difficult, I think, for Labour to get itself re-elected whenever the election takes place.
I hope he enjoys this final weekend of relative calm before he becomes Prime Minister, because it's not going to be an easy ride. Tim, thank you so much. Professor Tim Bale, Professor of Politics at Queen Mary University of London. A reminder, Andy Burnham will become Labour leader today at midday. You'll hear that speech live on LBC. And then, of course, Monday's the big one. We're all geared up for that. as Andy Burnham makes his way up Downing Street to be Prime Minister. John's in Welland Garden City on the appointment of Sir Mayor Sadiq Khan to the Lords. Yeah, got it.
Hello, Tom. I've been watching Mr. Khan over the years.
I think you mean Sir Mayor Lord, don't you?
Yeah, Mr. Khan was fine for me, thank you. The biggest eye-opener to the type of person Mr. Khan is was when he has been interviewed in the chamber, in the London Assembly, I think it's called, over the rape and grooming gangs in London. Suzanne, I can't remember the name of the politician, the Conservative politician, Suzanne Sarandon.
Susan Hall.
That's the one. She's endlessly questioned him over it, and his responses and obfuscation of that one issue highlights completely what an evil and horrid man he is. I just look in his eyes when he's avoiding those questions, and I think it's so disgusting. I'm shaking now thinking about it, to be honest with you. He's an awful, awful man.
Well, I'm going to put you down as not a fan, John. Politicians avoid answering all kinds of questions. I'm not sure we can call that necessarily evil. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. In the next 60 minutes...
Every American deserves to know that when they cast their vote, that vote will be counted accurately.
President Trump has accused China of interference in the 2020 U.S. election. We'll examine those claims. God, that's an awful noise. A postman in an England shirt booted a partially blind Shih Tzu called Elspeth, causing the dog to be put down. We'll get the details. And...
we should use visa sanctions and cut overseas aid. And we should do that not just to Pakistan, but any country that doesn't take back its own citizens.
Quite extraordinarily, Pakistan says Britain is to blame for the Rochdale rape gang, saying the onus lies on where he grew up, was raised and groomed. Are they right?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Andy Burnham will promise to be unashamedly Labour when he takes over the party leadership later. Mr. Burnham will use a speech in London to say that he intends to fix the big things that politics has neglected. He won the backing of 369 Labour MPs and most trade unions linked to the party to secure his status as the sole candidate. Labour Mayor of South Yorkshire, Oliver Coppard, has told LBC what he's expecting from his new leader.
A greater focus on the North, greater focus on devolution. Andy is a good politician. He is a good communicator. He knows that he needs to establish himself, I think, in the public eye. It's what he did in Greater Manchester when he came in. He said he was going to tackle homelessness and crack down on that problem, and he did. I think Andy is going to have a specific set of challenges that he is going to want to address, and he's going to communicate them effectively.
And LBC will have full live coverage of the handover of power from Sir Keir Starmer to Andy Burnham on Monday. The International Monetary Fund has warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr. Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. His report says the challenging position of the country's finances means support for things like energy bills will have to be offset by savings. The IMF is an international organisation with 190 member countries that work together to try to stabilise the global economy. Financial analyst Catherine Brooks has told Tom Swarbrick the organisation has warned UK policy should remain tightly targeted and budget neutral.
So they're telling Andy Burnham, essentially, that Britain can't afford a fresh spending binge and they need to be really selective in accommodating new demands, i.e. stop appeasing Labour backbenchers. It also cautioned the UK is already under a historic tax burden, so stop taxing everything and think about spending cuts. Now, they've made very specific recommendations, which includes ditching the triple lock, instead having like a kind of universal cost of living measure that pensions would go up by instead.
President Trump has alleged there are shocking vulnerabilities in the American electoral system. He's accused China of interference in the 2020 vote, which he lost to Joe Biden. He also claimed intelligence services suppressed information about the extent of what he called Chinese meddling. China's embassy in Washington has strongly denied interfering in any presidential election. The US has been carrying out a sixth night of strikes on Iranian targets. Iranian state media says five bridges in the south of the country were hit in the latest wave, while Tehran has said it hit American targets around the Gulf in response. And FIFA says it's assessing match reports before deciding on potential further steps against Argentina's footballers. A banner claiming the Falkland Islands belonging to Argentina was displayed after their World Cup semi-final win over England. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,572. It closed up 56 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in the south, a high of 30 degrees. From Global Newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Looking to boost your career or just starting out? As the experts in online learning, the Open University has over 200 qualifications to choose from, like business, psychology, computing, and many more. With tutor support and courses that fit around your life, getting those in-demand skills employers are looking for isn't so far away. Search the Open University to find out more. The Open University. The future is open.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you. 4 minutes past eight on Friday, the 17th of July. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast this Friday morning on LBC. Hope we find you very well indeed. Coming up,
China's illicit acquisition of 220 million US voter files.
President Trump has used a primetime TV address overnight to accuse China of interference in the 2020 US elections. Is there any truth to the claim? We'll look at it. Plus,
for more than 4 years, Jules' dad, Matt Sweeney, and I have fought every single day for the truth about what happened to our beautiful son, Jules.
An inquest into the death of a 14-year-old boy following what his mother, Ellen Room, believes was an online challenge gone wrong is to be reopened. We'll speak with her later in the show. And school for so many children across the country, and yet half of parents support a shorter summer holiday. My God, it's long. 2 million of you admit to taking your children out early for trips. Does that mean that school is seen as less important these days?
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
First this hour,
this man should not be in the UK. This man should be deported. We have been very clear about that.
The government is still dealing with how to deport the man who was the leader of the Rochdale rape gang. Released early, extraordinary, released early from prison. 14 years into a 22-year sentence for 30 child rape offences. This is Shabir Ahmed, who the government is attempting to deport back to Pakistan. He's a dual national holding Pakistani and British citizenship, stripped of his British citizenship after being convicted of those crimes some years ago. Front page of the Daily Mail this morning suggests that foreign aid to the tune of £153 million has been signed off for Pakistan, despite, they say, the country refusing to take back the grooming gang boss Shabir Ahmed. The Foreign Office slipped out the figures, revealing the bumper package for the next 3 years, despite Downing Street's claim that it was doing everything possible to deport him. Meanwhile, from Pakistan, this missive from the country's Foreign Office spokesman, who says this: his, i.e. Mr. Ahmed's, heinous crimes demand serious introspection rather than a quest to search for extraneous causes. Pakistan condemns the incident of child sex abuse in the strongest possible terms. Perpetrators of such heinous crimes must be investigated, prosecuted and punished to the fullest extent of the law, irrespective of race, ethnicity or religion. This matter is entirely an internal matter for the United Kingdom. The individual concerned is a British national who spent his entire adult life in the UK and was duly convicted by a British court for reprehensible offences committed on British soil. Regardless of where he was born, they say, the onus lies on where he grew up, was raised, groomed, and unfortunately spoiled. His heinous crimes demand serious introspection rather than a quest to search for extraneous causes. In a sense, blaming Britain for the capacity to turn this man into someone who commit these kinds of crimes, and that the onus now is on the British state, the British government and the British people to understand how and why that could happen. Fair? Harsh but fair? 03456060973. Alan Collins is a partner of the law firm Bolt Burden Kemp, who represents survivors of child sexual abuse. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Alan. I wonder what you make of
those.
No, you're very welcome. I wonder what you make of those quite extraordinary comments, actually, from the Pakistani Foreign Office spokesperson.
Well, they've got a point, because we, the UK, have created this problem, and political gestures are not going to solve this heinous problem. And it's a problem that will probably repeat itself. I think the chickens are coming home to roost, because in recent years we've seen a series of high-profile convictions of people like the defendant Ahmed, and there's going to be similar cases, I suspect. And the UK government, UK politicians, have got to take a long, hard look, because the Pakistani government has got a point. And I'm not at all surprised that Pakistan is taking this stance. Their attitude is going to be, why should we take this sex offender?
You
why
can understand that. When you say,
we can understand that.
Alan, when you say Britain is responsible for creating this problem, what do you mean by that? In what way?
Number one, I don't think we really got behind why we have these grooming cases. We are going to hopefully have this inquiry that was belatedly set up by the government. Whether it will get behind all of this or not remains to be seen, because politicians have skirted round it for far too long and chickens are coming home to roost. Lots of children and young people have been subjected to serial sexual abuse by these grooming gangs, and it's an absolute scandal.
Yeah, of course,
and I think with the general public are aware of that.
Mr. Collins, if we are saying, on the one hand, we don't know why this happened, we haven't got to the bottom of it, how can we then say that Britain created it?
Because this man should not have been released early, and he should not be out and about. So
I totally agree with you, but that doesn't explain why you think Britain created the problem for which he was convicted.
Well, we're going to have this inquiry, which hopefully will get behind a lot of the problems.
That Britain created this problem?
Because it's avoided addressing grooming gangs for far too long. That's the issue. This is not a new subject. Way back in the 1990s, the powers that be were aware of these problems in some of our cities. There was indeed media coverage. And we've wasted, in my opinion, the last 30 years. And politicians have had 30 years to get to grips with all of this. And one of the issues is, what do you do with these offenders if they're convicted and then they are going to be released? Because it doesn't take a genius to work out, well, hang on a minute, if we're going to release these people, where are they going to go?
Yes, I understand.
It's all very well
the people
withdrawing their citizenship.
It's not a culture created in Britain. It's not a British national pastime to allow this stuff to happen. The people responsible for this are the people who are doing it.
Well, that is part of the story, but you can't just look at these things in isolation. Many of these children and young people who were sexually exploited by these criminals were known to the powers that be.
Yep.
They were allowed to fall off the radar. They were extremely vulnerable, and they were exploited in the worst possible way.
So in that sense,
I agree with you.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Alan Collins is partner of the law firm Bolt Burden Kemp, representing survivors of child sexual abuse. Silesh Mehta is a criminal and human rights lawyer. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. It's going to be incredibly difficult for the British government to send this man back to Pakistan, certainly given those comments from the Pakistani government.
I suspect it is. There are three hurdles that the Home Secretary would have to get over in a case of this sort. The first one she's already succeeded in, the deprivation of citizenship. She's already decided that his presence in this country is not conducive to the public good. He is therefore no longer a British national, is a Pakistani national.
Yep.
First hurdle sorted. The next two hurdles, the difficulties. One is legal, that there's an old relic of old legislation that allows him to remain, and the Home Secretary is threatening to legislate to get rid of that so that the hurdle is lowered. But the most difficult hurdle for her will be the political one, because clearly from the comments that you've just read out, the Pakistani government does not want to take him back. And that's really the politics of the matter.
And if the politics of the matter are that they are at loggerheads, despite apparent negotiations, this man, we also think, is probably going to test through the courts whether or not he is legally allowed to be deported. How long could that take?
Certainly, as far as the legislation is concerned, that can be dealt with fairly quickly, the deportation aspect, to take away what some lawyers would say is a loophole. So that would be the easy part. The much more difficult part is then persuading the receiving government, the Pakistani government, to accept him. That's a problem in every deportation case. Usually it's done by negotiation or treaty.
And we don't have an extradition treaty with Pakistan, is that right?
Not one that will allow them to take him back if they don't want to.
The Pakistani government is right, isn't it, to say that the, I'm quoting here, the government of Pakistan has no connection whatsoever with this matter. That's true.
As a matter of fact, it's true, unless one says that, well, because Mr. Ahmed is now a Pakistani citizen, then, of course, there is still that connection with the Pakistani state. But as far as where the offending occurred, the length of time that Mr. Ahmed's been in this country, there is some justification in the Pakistani government being reluctant to take back a convicted serial offender.
Really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Silas Mehta is criminal and human rights lawyer. In strict terms, parts of this statement is right. The Pakistani government has no connection whatsoever with this matter. We cannot, they say, be associated with any decisions relating to the individual's release or subsequent treatment under British law. They're not going to take him back. Meanwhile, we're sending £153 million in foreign aid to a country that we're at loggerheads with about whether or not they would take him back. And the visas keep going, etc. When the Pakistani government say this is actually a time for the United Kingdom to introspect rather than to search for extraneous causes, other reasons for why this happened, do you think that's fair? Do you think that's true? Albeit difficult to hear. 03456060973. Come to your calls in a few moments' time. Tom Swarbrick here, after the news.
The People's Republic of China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history.
Overnight, President Trump has used a primetime TV address to accuse China of interference in the 2020 US elections. Any truth to it? We'll get into those claims after this. 8:15, news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will promise to be unashamedly Labour when he takes over the party leadership later. The International Monetary Fund's warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr. Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. And President Trump has accused China of interfering in the 2020 US election. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays of about 40 minutes on the A2 westbound from Gravesend to the Bean interchange, and that's following an accident. Delays continue on the A13 westbound to Canning Town flyover, and that's where a van's broken down. On the North Circular Road, it's very busy northbound up to the M11 junction, and that's also after an accident. In Croydon, Cherry Orchard Road is closed both ways, and that's causing delays, and the Marylebone Road remains closed westbound outside Baker Street because of an accident that happened in the early hours of this morning. On the underground, the Jubilee line's just been suspended between Stratford and West Ham. Still no service at all on the Windrush line, and the DLR services aren't running between Pudding Mill Lane and Stratford.
This is LBC. From Christopher Nolan.
No one could stand between me and home, not even the gods.
Critics are calling The Odyssey cinema at its most epic. It's an unmissable masterpiece. Staggering. Spectacular and soul-rattling.
Ithaca's king is coming back.
Bringing vengeance.
Bringing it all.
The Odyssey. In cinemas now. Book tickets. This is LBC.
Major index. In a world full of noise and uncertainty, IG is the investment platform that backs you. Forget the dubious tips from that guy down the pub. Get real-time insights, analysis, and tools. No more fat cat brokers clawing your gains. Pay zero commission on your investments. Switch to a platform trusted by British investors for over 50 years. IG. Trade. Invest. Progress. Your capital's at risk. Other fees may apply.
From countryside escapes to seaside breaks,
and plenty of open roads in between. There's a Mazda for every kind of summer. Get 0% APR on selected models when ordered by the 30th of September and keep your mind on the really important stuff, like trying to eat that ice cream before it melts. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of December 2026. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
Vodafone is backing the UK with an £11 billion investment to make the nation's biggest network even better.
Fair play. That's a big commitment.
So you can launch that business.
So I can start selling my model trains in Pwllheli.
Multitask in a haze of glory.
I can stream Wimbledon whilst on a video call.
Start doing more of what you love from more places. Opportunity awaits. Switch to Vodafone today on the nation's network.
Nation's Network means UK's biggest network through Vodafone 3 merger based on mobile sites versus major providers. Network improvements by 2034. See vodafone.co.uk/TNN. Subject to coverage.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
8:19 the time, Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. The President's been speaking overnight about what he says is the election interference of the Chinese during the 2020 election. Is there any truth to those claims? We'll look at that in just a moment. His flav in Barnet. Tom, I threw my hands up in the air in despair when I heard that the UK government has just signed off £153 million in aid to Pakistan. Why didn't we pause those payments until the man had been deported? This is Shabir Ahmed, the leader of the Rochdale Grooming Gang. It's a very good question. Pakistan is a nuclear-armed nation. Do they need 153 quid? I mean, £153 million isn't going to make a blind bit of difference, I wouldn't thought, in a country of that size, with in some parts, that relative wealth. Why are we doing it? OK, well, it's a soft power tool, isn't it? It's, you know, it's not going to make a amount to a hill of beans financially, but it's a soft power tool about relations between... Well, how's that going? Because now we've got a Pakistani senior foreign affairs spokesperson saying... Sorry, Britain, it's your fault that this man committed these crimes. We've got nothing to do with it. 03456060973. Jane's in Camden. Jane.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I wonder what you make of these comments.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Pakistani government have a fair point. I don't think in this country that the government has ever taken assault against women seriously at all. So, you know, it's literally
these are
just
children.
Been...
I mean, it's not even women, I'm afraid. These are girls.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's just open season on women and children, as you say. You're absolutely right. So they have a point, and even now it's demonstrating that the government can't get to grips with this. I mean, quite frankly, they should just turn around and say, "Fair enough, you won't take him back. We won't be giving you any further contributions, any more financial aid, and actually all the visas and everything, we're going to stop." I mean, again, it just goes
Why should Pakistan take this man back? Just for argument's sake, Jane, why should their government... Imagine you're Jane in Islamabad. And, you know, why should you be told that your government is accepting a convicted child sex offender back into your country who's not been there since he was a kid?
Yeah. So I think culturally in Pakistan and in a lot of the other Middle Eastern countries, I know that's a generalization, but women are seen as second class citizens. So the culture has actually been grown in that country. I'm sure that this despicable individual, his parents would have, you know, continued with that in their own household. So, you know, his thought about the value of women and indeed young girls would be very, very low. That is a culture that continues to be practiced in Pakistan.
But to put that alongside your comments about the treatment of British women and girls here, are you not saying simultaneously that there's a culture within Britain that devalues women and girls similar to the culture in Pakistan?
You know, you're absolutely right. There is a difference, and I think the difference is that in law, you know, you are not supposed to assault a woman or, you know, there's a thing called consensual sex. And the same goes with children. There is a law there. In Pakistan, I wouldn't say so. So I totally agree. I mean, the issue that I have with the UK is that the law is not applied and it's not applied fairly. In Pakistan, there is no law. You know, you can kind of just, you can pretty much do what you want. There's young girls that are being married off at very young ages. So, you know, again, I totally agree with your statement. But I would say that, you know, if it was the best of a bad bunch, I would say the UK was slightly better. So it is a culture that is practiced within Pakistan. Feel free for other callers to ring up and tell me that I'm wrong. But at the end of the day, this is the country that he originates from. Mm. He should go back. Now, I would be worried for the young Pakistan women who already are subjected to enough. They don't want this idiot over there as well. But unfortunately, that's where he originated from. That's where he needs to go back to. And it's not just about then just sending him back. It's also about sending a message to the rest of them that want to kind of do that. They come over here and they want to do that. That basically, you will be sent back. And
Jane, I, only for time reasons, I hope you feel you've got your points across. I agree with a lot of them. Thank you very much indeed for the call. 0345 60 60 60 973. Why do Pakistan send us? I mean, you know, we are a nuclear power, as they are. Our economy is probably in slightly better shape than theirs. We have much less absolute poverty in this country than they do in Pakistan. But what do we get anything? No? All right, OK, well, if it's all one way, we'll just knock it on the head then. 153 million quid doesn't buy you anything, really, in terms of the scale of the country of Pakistan. Why are we bothering with this? 0345 60 60 973. Robert, to you in just a few moments. 8:24. Next.
The People's Republic of China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history, resulting in China's illicit acquisition of 220 million U.S. voter files.
President Trump, using a 25-minute speech last night to contradict assessments from America's own intelligence agencies, alleging China had carried out the largest compromise of election data in history. He said he was declassifying sensitive information that showed Beijing had illicitly acquired 220 million voter files, including names, addresses and other data used to register to vote. He claimed members of the US intelligence community deliberately suppressed what Beijing had done. Many of the documents released alongside the speech, though, unfortunately, are redacted. Dr. Katie Pruszynski is independent political specialist in US politics and Trump's elections. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. What evidence did he cite to back up his claim that there was election interference by China? Morning.
This is precisely the point, and which you've made already, which is that the evidence that he presented isn't quite evidence, I suppose. It's sort of a lot of it is conjecture. You said that a lot of it has been redacted. He's made a lot of claims in the past about the security of US elections. I don't think that he presented anything materially new last night, although the sort of the accusations being directed towards China specifically sort of honed in more upon a sort of a tangible adversary. Previously, he sort of accused the deep state, mm-hmm. The Democrats, of undermining the 2020 election. But the evidence is simply not there. And we know that because he went to court so many times in the immediate aftermath of the 2020 election. And those court cases were roundly thrown out by Republican-appointed judges as well as Democrat-appointed judges. And so unless he can come through with evidence that is clear for the world to see, that is unredacted, that it can be kind of interrogated and stand up to that kind of scrutiny, then unfortunately we're kind of no closer to understanding what he's basing that on.
Is this all part of an argument to get voter ID?
It's certainly part of it, I would have thought. You know, I think reasonably, you know, he's very frustrated about the slow passage of the Save America Act through Congress, which is stalled in Congress at the moment. Quite a lot of congressional Democrats and Republicans are nervous about some of the measures that are in that bill. It really kind of hampers access to the polls. He's very frustrated by it. So you can see that this forms part of a picture of him justifying why much stricter voter access regulations are required in order to secure the elections in the United States. It's just that that's not backed up by evidence.
Let's see what the intelligence services make of what the president is saying. Dr. Katie Pruszynski, thank you for your time. Independent political specialist in US politics and Trump's elections. 8:27. Barry's in Plumstead to come back to the deportation, attempted deportation of this Rochdale grooming gang leader. Hi, Barry.
Hi there. Good morning, Tom. I think Trump's trying to angle, but never mind. So I don't like this guy. I despise what he's done. Really, state failure has been the problem here all the way along. State failure failed those girls. We generally accept that.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. State failure failed to integrate him when he first came here and show him custom, let him live outside the law. I'm from the Windrush generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. State failure tried to push me out my mum had to do her best to keep me in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is how it operates. When you put people outside the laws, they start acting outside the law. State failure.
When you say you put people outside of the law,
you give them the space. I think of all the rest of the other criminals and people who don't see themselves as part of this country. Yeah. So they see themselves as sort of operating slightly outside of the country. It's not mine. I don't vote.
Yeah,
I don't get involved.
Yeah.
There's an attitude. The reason why that happens is because of the state failure.
Okay,
it's because of the and also attitudes.
Yeah.
So state failure and people's attitudes.
So stronger integration is what you're talking about, or actually assimilation, really.
Not really assimilation, but you integrate. You take on the best practices of both. That's what integrating is. You know, it's taking on the best practices. It's not Pakistani practice.
Mm-hmm.
to do these things. We have a very high rate of child pregnancy in this country. We have churches that were paedophile grooming gangs.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't. This is the thing about introspection.
But in the event that you're right, you're absolutely right. There are a huge number of British citizens who are paedophiles. But in the event that there is an individual who holds both British and another country's citizenship, and it is the right of a British government, and it is the law, that if you commit a serious crime that results in this particular length of jail time, you can be deported and stripped of your British citizenship.
Yeah. But he doesn't have another citizenship, so you can't...
He does, he's a Pakistani citizen.
He's not Pakistani.
He literally has Pakistani citizship. Sorry, you're wrong on that. He has Pakistani citizenship.
So he denounced that, so he gave up his Pakistani citizenship a long time ago.
He didn't.
Spent the rest of his life here. Well, that's what I was reported. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, but
he's a dual national. British citizenship has been stripped of him, and it's been stripped of him. You're right.
I might want to get Barbadian citizenship or something. It doesn't mean that you no longer take responsibility for the things that happen in this country under this state. The state fails also to legislate properly to jail him. The state failed to build jails. The state failed. So when the state has failed, understand that actually it's underinvestment. It's not. If you keep pushing the problem away, you deny all of us
opportunity
to have good investment.
There are a huge number of state failings that led to this and other scandals of this nature. Absolutely, without question. One of those failures might also be the failure to deport individuals who do this and should be deported.
That's trying to throw away your own problem. It may, in some cases, deportation may be suitable. But you know what? In this case, this is a British guy. And there are many other British people that might be in a situation. You can't keep dumping your situations elsewhere. And if they can't go somewhere else, what you're talking about is going back to where Australia started. Start another country with criminals. It might work in 200 years.
Not sure we can go back to that. Barry, thank you for the call. 03456060973 is the number. Loads more calls to come on this. There's one spare line, two spare lines into the building if you want to get your view on the radio this morning. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. After the news...
The postman who asked you nicely to put your dogs away felt threatened enough that he had to lash out.
Astonishing story, this. A postman in an England shirt booted a partially blind Shih Tzu called Elspeth, causing the dog to be put down. Incredibly distressing for the owner. Bring the details of what is happening to the postman after this. 8:31, news headlines on LBC, Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become Labour leader later, setting him up to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. In a speech in London, Mr Burnham will promise to govern in an unashamedly Labour way. The International Monetary Fund has warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. Its report says the challenging position of the country's finances means support for things like energy bills will have to be offset by savings. And a man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. Police say Vahid Abari, who's 39 and from Liverpool, was arrested in the Birmingham area on Wednesday. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
Politics can change very fast. Over just one weekend, a prime minister vanishes, another suddenly appears. It's the changing of the guard.
I will resign as leader of the Labour Party.
A by-election in Makerfield brought Andy Burnham back to Westminster. Labour MPs rallied behind him, and now, as he prepares to walk into Downing Street, the next battle begins.
We have an opportunity to turn the tide, to make the country feel like it's working again, to make people feel hope again.
Every prime Prime Minister defines themselves by the people they choose around them. Who takes the great offices of state? Who is trusted with the toughest jobs? And what does that tell us about the direction of the country? Don't miss a moment with LBC live from Westminster as Andy Burnham becomes Britain's next Prime Minister. Starts this Monday from 7 a.m.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the UK's only breast cancer awareness charity for young people. We educate people on the signs of breast cancer, as when found early, treatments are more effective and survival rates higher. This is your reminder to check your boobs, chest or pecs. Learn how at copperfeel.org.
Up to speed.
Your Formula One podcast.
Round 10 is the iconic Spa circuit in Belgium.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday on YouTube or Global Player.
Choose a Wix kitchen and choose peace of mind. Add the option of installation to your order and relax as Wix approved installers fit your kitchen. Visit Wix today.
You can now get Sky, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Netflix and Hey You together in one subscription. So,
ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, take your seats on your sofas, brew your cuppas and turn your phones to silent. Because the world of ultimate entertainment is about to begin. Sit back, relax and head to sky.com to find out more.
It's starting.
Require Sky Stream and Sky Ultimate TV subscription. Minimum broadband speed of 30 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
8:34 the time. Here's Ben on WhatsApp this morning. Tom, I've lived in Australia since 2011. Are we seriously suggesting that if I commit a major crime, they're not within their rights to send me back to the UK? This is nuts, says Ben. Robert, I'll come to your call on that in just a few moments. First, the unmistakable sound of a barking shih tzu. A postman killed a partially blind dog after kicking it like a football. The Royal Mail delivery driver kicked the shih tzu, called Ethel, in Aylesbury at around 11 o'clock on Saturday, causing the pet to suffer organ failure. The dog's owner claimed that the driver, dressed in an England football shirt, denied kicking the dog when he handed her a parcel, but the Ring doorbell footage obtained by the Sun newspaper showed him booting the pet, which rolled to the ground. The driver has reportedly been suspended by Royal Mail. Sasha Kamali is a spokesman for the animal rights group PETA. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. The footage of this is absolutely appalling. What is the kind of punishment that could befall someone who does this?
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. Well, I think we can all agree that kicking a blind elderly dog is a truly horrendous act. And it is something that we should not be quick to dismiss, because anyone who's capable of violence like this towards animals is a potential danger to society. So the police and Royal Mail need to urgently investigate this and treat this with the seriousness that it deserves. And more generally, we always urge anyone who witnesses or knows of any acts of cruelty to animals to report them to authorities so that perpetrators can be held accountable.
I don't have the information to suggest this, but let me put it for argument's sake. As a postman, you walk up to someone's door. I used to deliver catalogues back in the day, and there was often a warning on people's letterboxes about be careful with your posting stuff through because your fingers and that. If a dog comes running up to a postman, looks aggressive, starts yapping, barking, whatever, and in an act of self-defence, postman boots said dog dies, is there a discussion to be had about whether that's cruel?
Well, you know, if that were the case, then that would be probably on the dog's guardians to ensure that their dogs were not posing a threat to the person in question. But this has no signs of danger at all. This was an 11-year-old dog with only one tooth left. It's highly unlikely that she posed any kind of a threat to the delivery driver. It doesn't seem like this was self-defense in this case. This just seems like aggression. And anyway, there are ways to handle dogs that aren't in the best of moods, like having treats available that can help diffuse situations with dogs sometimes.
The quote from the owner, He didn't even just kick her. He toe-punted her like she was a football. She flew up in the air and hit the ground and rolled three times. She went flying. I mean, the Royal Mail, we've got word that he's been reported. He's been suspended. Royal Mail are saying that they're deeply sorry for the distressing incident and they're going to pay the family's vet bills.
Yeah, that's an appropriate reaction, that they are taking action on this. And it's just so horrifying. My heart really goes out to this family who has lost a family member who's been with them for years just because someone decided to kick her like a football. And yes, this should be taken seriously and action should be taken, because we have seen many times that, unfortunately, these are rarely isolated incidents. People who are capable of such cruelty to animals, they're often repeat offenders, and it's not rare for them to go on to lash out against humans. So this is something that should be taken with the seriousness that it deserves. It's a violent and truly heinous act.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Sasha Kamerly is a spokesperson for the animal rights group PETA. I'll bring that Royal Mail statement again. We are deeply sorry for this distressing incident and we know how upsetting it is for the family. We are treating this matter very seriously. We have seen the footage, launched a full investigation to establish the circumstances. We've also confirmed to the family that we will cover the veterinary costs. We have a six-month-old golden retriever. If anyone boots my dog, I reserve the right to boot you back. Okay? And I appreciate that there might be moments when someone comes up to your door, a delivery driver, post office, postman, whatever, and the dog's barking and charging at you. And if there's a self-defence defence, then fair enough. But a partially blind, one-toothed, 12-year-old, 11-year-old shih tzu? Come on. 03456060973. Let's come back to your calls on this issue of the deportation. Lucian's in Manchester. Hi, Lucian.
Hi, Tom. Good morning. Look, curious about your last few callers, in actual fact. They seem to be putting the onus on this country. Pakistan's statement seems to say that because of our culture, because women are free and equal to everybody and entitled to wear what they want, that some reason that this person is, you know, we've corrupted this person. Well, he didn't come from Pakistan uncorrupted in the beginning. And in any case, I mean, it has nothing to do with Windrush, as the man was saying, that we're the ones who have failed. We failed to stop it, but we didn't create this monster, and we shouldn't have to pay for this monster. He should go back. He does have a passport. Your last caller was misinformed. He does have a passport, and he does have a nationality, and it's Pakistani, and he should be sent back. I mean, I can't see why we're going to be giving Pakistan £130-odd million. I wouldn't send it. I would stop all the visas.
Stay there. Kylie's in Chippenham. Kylie.
Hi. I'm a little bit annoyed with your reporting earlier, actually. When you had Jane on, and you allowed Jane to go off on this tangent about how Pakistan treat women like second-class citizens.
Yeah.
You didn't even do, like, a quick Google search would have showed you that the legal age of consent in Pakistan is 18, ours is 16, right? Now, I've never been to Pakistan, but I have lived in Bangladesh. I'm a white woman, and I've lived in Bangladesh, yeah? I lived there for 6 months back in 2003. And the women there, if anything, were overly protected. Oh, you can't do that because, oh, no, you can't, no, you can't do that because it's, you know. And they were really, and also the women in the families over there, they ruled the house. They were the boss, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I was a bit annoyed that you didn't even, like, question the things she was saying, because that was her stereotypical views that we've been given over here. Second point, I don't think we should be given Pakistan aid, because, like you said, they have got nuclear weapons and stuff. I don't know why we're giving them aid. However, if you think that Pakistan should take him back, then we should take the girl that went over to Syria back.
Shamima Begum.
Yeah. Because she wasn't born anywhere else. She was born here. Mm-hmm. Her parents might be Bangladeshi. She's never lived in Bangladesh. She's our problem. She's
Lucian?
A British citizen.
That's right.
Lucian?
Yeah, I would like to say also, my understanding of Pakistan law is that if you rape, you're going to spend the rest of your life in a disgusting hole in the ground. And if you gang rape, it's a death penalty. So other people saying, oh, it's okay in Pakistan. I think she was confusing things going on in India. But in Pakistan, apparently, they have the death penalty for rape. And if not the death penalty, you're going to spend the rest of your life in a hole in the ground. So, I mean, I just don't get it. We should stop this immediately. This man should be kicked out of the country, back to his country, and they can do whatever they want with him. I don't care.
I want to say something. If we send him back, fine. But then we take Shamima Begum back as well.
Yeah, that's
fine. Prison here. And the thing is, as well, I want to say, my kids are half Bangladeshi, yeah? And since all this grooming gang stuff has been going on, they've been called nonces, they've been called all kinds of names because it's just a way to racially attack my children. Mm-hmm. But I come from I don't come from Chippenham, my kids go to school there, so I'm in Chippenham now on the school run. I come from a smaller town. And in that small town, I personally, by name, know 14 predators that have been arrested and sent to prison.
Yeah.
13 of them are men.
Yep.
One of them is a mixed race man. The rest are white men, and one is a white woman. They're predators everywhere, and our country needs to get a grip on this.
Would you say that there is something inherent about Britain or British culture, British identity, that means that those people are the predators that they are? Because I don't think so.
I don't think it's a British thing. I think I personally, and I know you're a guy and I know the other guy is a guy, and I apologise. I think this is a culture of how everyone treats their sons, how they raise their sons. And I think we need to do better as society to raise our sons to respect women. I don't think it's an Asian thing. I don't think it's a white thing. I don't think it's a black thing. All this focusing on about all the grooming gangs. But there's predators everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. It's really scary. As a woman, and as a mother of two daughters, mm-hmm. it's a scary thing, especially when, like, you're on Facebook and yet another face comes up from school that has now gone to prison for raping a 13-year-old child. And you think, oh my God, I'm shaking, I'm so angry.
Lucien?
Yeah, it's not... This isn't about Pakistan or being Pakistani. This is, I mean, paedophilia, white guys, Germans, Americans, Brits, I mean, they're all involved in that, you know, I mean...
But it is a statement of fact that this man is a Pakistani citizen.
He has Pakistani citizenship. But it's not a Pakistani problem. That's not because he's Pakistani, he's a monster.
Yes.
And we didn't create that monster because we allow our young women in this country to wear and be out and visible.
I think to some extent that is what maybe might be an implication of what the Pakistani foreign spokesperson is suggesting, that we created the problem. Britain created the problem. Lucien, thank you for the call. Kylie, I really appreciate your call too. Must just say, some of the language may have been a little bit fruity during the course of that conversation. Apologies if you heard a word that was offensive. It wasn't intentional. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. After nine... Other than Boxing Day... This is the best day of the year, the beginning of the school summer holidays. But half of parents support a shorter summer holiday, with 2 million of you admitting of taking your child out early for trips. Is that because school is seen as less important these days? We'll get into the details of that shortly. 8:46, news headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become Labour leader later, setting him up to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. The International Monetary Fund has warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. And a man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the A2 westbound from Gravesend to Bean after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. There are queues on the A13 westbound. This is from Plaistow to the Canning Town flyover. It's because a van's broken down and one lane is closed. The Marylebone Road remains closed westbound outside Baker Street Tube Station, and in Croydon, Cherry Orchard Road is closed both ways following an accident. On the Underground, the District Line can't run between West Ham and Whitechapel. The Jubilee Line is suspended between Stratford and West Ham, and DLR services aren't running between Pudding Mill Lane and Stratford. No service on the Windrush line. The entire line remains suspended, and that's because of an ongoing investigation at Whitechapel.
This is LBC.
Ever get giddy renewing your car insurance? Fantasize about finance offers or paying your service bill? Probably not. After all, the best bit about driving a BMW is driving it. So leave the admin and skip to the best bit. Choose a new BMW 1 Series or 2 Series Grand Coupe by the 30th of September to enjoy a year's insurance, 3 years servicing, plus 2.9% APR representative. Search BMW, skip to the best bet. BMW UK Limited is a credit broker, not a lender. BMW Finance, T's and C's apply. Insurance age restrictions and exclusions apply. Whew, that's the admin over with.
This is LBC.
Get unlimited video calls with vets from First Vet with Pets in a Pickle. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £42 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's draw, Euro Millions, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
From countryside escapes to seaside breaks and plenty of open road in between, there's a Mazda for every kind of summer. Get 0% APR on selected models when ordered by the 30th of September and keep your mind on the really important stuff, like trying to eat that ice cream before it melts. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of December 2026. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
London, the app for black cabs is here. Jump. Get about with drivers who have the world-famous knowledge and know every street in London. And unlike other black cab apps, you'll only pay the meter fare. No booking fees, no surge fees, no it's raining fees, no there's a game on fees. No fees ever. Just tap the app to hail your black cab. Jump. The app for the cab that made London, London. Download Jump today.
Choose a Wickes kitchen and choose peace of mind. Add the option of installation to your order and relax as Wickes approved installers fit your kitchen. Visit Wickes today.
The new Hot Honey McCrispy at McDonald's. It's got hot honey in it.
Hot honey.
And bacon. Oh, and two slices of cheddar cheese. And hot honey.
Hot honey.
Did I mention it's got hot honey in it?
Hot honey.
The new Hot Honey McCrispy.
Hot honey.
Because let's face it, we're here for the sauce. Available until the 24th of August. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Poor Ethel, the partially blind, one-toothed Shih Tzu who was booted around by a postman to the point where it resulted in organ failure and the dog had to be put down. Clearly, there's a case to answer there about what on earth drove that man to do it. Royal Mail say they are investigating. It's reported that he's been suspended. I've got to say, there's more support for the postman than I thought. Here's Ali. If the delivery driver had previously been attacked by a dog or had an allergy, I understand why he would have reacted so dramatically. How is he to know that the dog is partially blind? If the dog was charging out barking, then an automatic response is to defend yourself no matter the size. People with dogs need to understand not everyone likes them, and stop letting them run around freely when someone comes to the door. Alex is in Bristol. Alex.
Hi, yeah. So like I told the personnel on the phone, about 2 years ago, my daughter was 3 years old in the park, and just out of the blue, an average-sized dog ran and from behind and kind of jumped on her back, forcing her to the ground.
God.
I instinctively kicked the dog off, I'm a little bit nervous. And then I went to the owner, and the owner was just like, it's a house dog, it was just playing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how am I supposed to know that?
Yeah.
And then last weekend, I was at the park again, and for the last 2 years, every time I'm at the park with my daughter, I'm not about to get emotional. I'm monitoring dogs that are off their leash.
Yeah.
And then, so on Sunday, Saturday, a dog ran, again, off its leash, running around, I assume just enjoying the park. But it ran at my daughter twice, to the point where I had to lift my daughter up.
Yeah.
And it ran underneath the legs.
Oh, God. So your poor daughter, I mean, she must be terrified at this stage now.
Oh, yeah. So with me, I'm fine. Like, dogs can come up to me. I'm fine with them. But obviously, my daughter, I'll do anything to protect her.
Yeah, of course. Because she can't, you know, at 5 years old as she is now, she's not going to be able to do it herself. If it's a big dog or a, you know. So you you kicked the, or booted this dog away, or you pushed it down, or you did what you needed to do to get it away from your daughter, and the owner of the dog was, what, more concerned with the safety of the dog?
Yeah. Yeah, they don't really care, and they don't even respond at all. They were just like, it's a house dog, it's just playing.
Yeah, well, you're not to know that. Your daughter's not going to know that. She's going to be terrified. You're going to be shaking. Because that, one bad day for that dog, and that goes really badly wrong for your daughter.
Yeah, so when I was, and just another story, I'm not afraid of dogs, but when I was, obviously I'm from South Africa, and I don't know if you can tell by my accent. A cousin of mine was at a friend's house, and she got attacked. She was only like 6, 7, something like that. Mm-hmm. Mauled on the face and arms. To be fair, the owner did take the dog out and shoot it.
Yep.
But that left it disfigured.
Yeah.
So that's just a little bit of backstory of why I'm extra protective of.
I think you should be. I have to say, Alex, we've got a dog. We've had dogs. My kids have been around dogs growing up all their lives. I'm very, very conscious of other people's dogs going up to my children, even though they are very confident around animals, what have you. Because you just never know. You just never know. And I think there are some pretty poor owners of dogs who don't take that into account when they allow their dog to run up to you off the leash without a muzzle, what have you. You just don't know. So I completely agree with you, and you're absolutely right to do what you did. There are circumstances in which kicking an animal to protect your child is the right thing to do. And I know there are people going to go at me at that, but it is. I'm sorry. If it's a choice between your three-year-old daughter or the physical well-being of another person's mutt, no. The dog's going to get it. Alex, thank you. Natalie's in Willesden. Natalie.
Hello?
Your thoughts on the deportation of this Pakistan man?
Yeah, I'm not going to stay long. It's just some food for thought for you and your audience. I think Britain is a hypocrite. They're still trying to control the world as they've always used to, as they've done in the past. Sorry, I've lost my chat.
Anyway, is this in relation to Shamima Begum?
Yes, it is. You're just getting a taste of your own medicine because. Shamima Begum was your responsibility, yet you don't want to take it back.
Britain, yeah.
And you expect the Pakistani government to take their own mm-hmm. man back, and yet you've got a cheek to be threatening them with aid. It's universal law. It's just like what goes up, what goes around comes around.
So it's sort of a karmic. This is karma.
Yeah.
Well, Natalie, I think there's a question about whether or not we should be sending Pakistan aid anyway, regardless of this issue. Again, they've got nukes, you know, they spend a lot of money on defence, they've got an army, do we really need to be sending them this money? If we're sending them this money because it's a soft power tool, a diplomatic lever, then pull it, because it's not working, is it, in order to get what the British government want? We have the right, the British government has the right to make laws that says we're going to deport people if they've got dual nationality for certain crimes. This is one of them. I think the British government should try very hard to exercise that right.
Right, okay, yeah, that was just my point anyway, so I'm not going to...
No, you're not going to stay long. Natalie, thank you very much, I appreciate the point. Robert's in Wembley. Robert!
Hiya, mate, long time. Couple of quick points, I know we haven't got much time. So, first things first, I have no idea why Lucian mentioned India while he was talking. If you check the facts, India has a conviction rate of over 20% for rapists. Pakistan has an overall national rapist conviction rate of less than 3%. So maybe he should check his facts before he quotes propaganda. And then the second thing, why are we sending money to a country that is not a democracy? It's a widely known fact. Pakistan is a military-controlled dictatorship and the civilian government of puppets. So, and well, most
that
would of the
be, that might be your view. Others, I think, would have a different view.
Their democratically elected prime minister is in jail.
You're talking about Imran Khan.
Yep.
Yeah. The problem with the foreign aid discussion. I remember 2017 when I was working in Downing Street, and somebody asked the Prime Minister at the time, Theresa May, a question about our foreign aid spend. I think this was on Question. I can't remember. Forgive me. It's a long time ago now. But their point was that they had read that the British government sent money aid to North Korea. And we all looked at each other behind the scenes.
8 million, I checked. It's 8 million. If we sent 8 million to North Korea, or 8 or 4, if we sent that much to North Korea, and I double-checked this, why are we sending 153 to Pakistan?
Why are we sending any money to North Korea at all in any way, shape or form? Because we all looked at each other backstage, we were looking at, surely that can't be right. And we checked it with the aid department. We spent 20 grand on a sort of a yoga retreat for elderly gentlemen in North Korea to help them with it. And you think, what the hell is going on?
Oh, I have ideas about why we're doing all this, but it's not for me to say. But the fact of the matter remains, Pakistan is not the bastion of democracy. It is not the bastion of good. It's the place where we've seen from its inception, where minorities have gone from their original number to significantly reduced numbers. Yet, that's never brought up. What is not also brought up is we spent £153 million to a country that is actively killing its civilians in the Kashmiri border, its own citizens. That's not on our media. Why is that not showing in the news?
All right. Robert, I appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. There are obviously question marks about this money going out. Here's Stephen. Tom, the Pakistanis are 100% correct in their position. This man was raised and committed his crimes in the UK, not Pakistan. He is our problem not to be shirked by dumping him in Pakistan. While the government continues to have those negotiations, I would suggest that from the comments of the Pakistan foreign spokesperson, it's not going to go the way the British government wants. We don't have an extradition treaty. It's on them to accept. There's going to be some bargaining there, I can tell you. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. In the next 60 minutes...
I'm going to try and turn over every single stone to see if there's an answer to understand why my 14-year-old boy is not alive.
The inquest into the death of 14-year-old Jules Sweeney will be reopened after the original conclusion was quashed at the High Court. You'll hear from his mother.
We are going to have to work quite hard to make sure we can pay our way. At some point, that might be having to ask for a little more.
As Andy Burnham is set to be named Labour leader this afternoon, the IMF warns that Britain cannot afford fresh spending binge. Do you have confidence in what might be our new Prime Minister's economic plans? And...
Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to.
Half of parents support a shorter summer holiday for their children, with 2 million admitting to taking their child out early for trips abroad. Is that because school is seen as less important now?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Andy Burnham will become the leader of the Labour Party later, setting him up to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. Mr Burnham will use a speech in London to promise to govern in an unashamedly Labour way and fix the big things that politics has neglected. Separately, some Labour MPs have already voiced concerns over the potential appointment of Shabana Mahmood as Chancellor. Sir Tony Blair's former communications director, Alistair Campbell, has told LBC Mr Burnham is under pressure.
In a sense, he can work off a blank sheet of paper. And the problem with the blank sheet of paper approach, which is his right, is that to put new people on that he may be very fond of, may think will be better than what's there now, he's going to have to knock quite a lot off. Added to which, although I think they've done a pretty good job up to now of keeping things reasonably tight, the last few days you've seen a little bit too much of the brief, the soap opera, the up-down stuff.
LBC will have full live coverage of the handover of power from Sir Keir Starmer to Andy Burnham on Monday. The incoming Prime Minister has already been warned that he can't afford any extra public spending. A report by the International Monetary Fund says Andy Burnham should try to stay focused on plans to grow the economy. It says the delicate position of the UK's finances means help for things like energy bills will have to be offset by savings. A man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
The 39-year-old was arrested in Birmingham on Wednesday, and after a counter-terrorism police searched properties linked to him, they've decided to charge him with assisting Iran's intelligence service. The senior officer who's in charge of the investigation says they haven't identified any direct threats towards any individual or community. Vahid Aberi is due to appear in court in London later today.
President Trump has made sweeping claims of Chinese interference in the 2020 US election, which he lost. Mr. Trump also alleged that US intelligence suppressed information about the extent of Beijing's activities. China's embassy in Washington has strongly denied the claims. And a consumer group has found that supermarket inflation has risen for the first time in more than a year, which said it increased from 2.4% in May to 2.6% in June. The conflict in Iran and pressure on supply chains are being blamed for the rise. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down two at £10,571, the pound, buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunshine for many. Some showers in southern England by the late afternoon, a high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
OK, Laura, from the top.
When your 9-year-old is an unexpected tuba prodigy, and now you want to support her cheek-puffing talent, be a step ahead with Barclays Premier. With personalised financial planning and a dedicated advisor. Barclays, backing your future. Eligibility criteria apply. Investment products and services are provided by Barclays Bank PLC and its subsidiaries. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you. 3 minutes past nine on Friday, the 17th of July. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick at breakfast, in for Nick Ferrari here on LBC. Hope we find you very well. Hopefully it's going to be a very sunny, hot Friday. The sun never stops. What a summer this is. Coming up.
It's so important that we try and understand what happened. And although it's not going to bring Jules back, we don't understand why our child's not here. And all we want is the right to see if we can understand what happened.
The inquest into the death of 14-year-old Jules Sweeney is going to be reopened after the original conclusion was quashed at the High Court. You're going to hear from his mum, Ellen, in just a few moments. Also,
I am not indisciplined when it comes to the public finances. I was in the Treasury.
As Andy, but I'm not sure that's quite the clincher of that argument he thinks it is. As Andy Burnham is set to be named Labour leader this afternoon, becoming Prime Minister on Monday, the IMF is warning that Britain cannot afford a fresh spending binge. One of its recommendations is that Britain starts charging wealthier people for use of parts of the NHS. Do you think that would help?
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
On to all of that in a few moments' time. First this hour. Day is the greatest day of the year, and it is. Christmas Day is fine, but it's all rigmarole. If Boxing Day is the greatest day of the year, then this has to be number two. The day that you leave school for those long summer holidays is one of the most joyous. You have done all the sports days, you've got the play out the way, you've been on your residential if you're in year six. And now the moment has come to get your shirt signed, get the sun. Everyone's got the... Do you remember the hats with the bit of fabric at the back to protect your neck that you always wore? Because you had to have one of those in your bag as a kid. And now the summer holidays stretch out before you. 8 weeks? Was it 7 weeks? 8 weeks for a lot of kids? 9 weeks for some? And yet, more than 2 million parents have admitted that they take their children out of school during term time because they cannot afford to travel in holidays. Meanwhile, more than half say that the school summer break should be shorter. The findings suggest, this is coming from a ParentKind national parent survey, the findings suggest that rising holiday prices are forcing many families to choose between following attendance rules and being able to afford a break. Last year, a record 459,000 fines were issued to parents, according to the DfE. That is a 4% rise from the year before. In total, this means that parents in the UK were fined more than 36 million quid. And the breakdown of these is really interesting. Nearly a quarter of parents in households earning more than 100 grand a year said they'd taken a child out of school to reduce those holiday costs. The figure was 25% among parents of children with special educational needs. And then there's around Britain. Which part of the United Kingdom do you think has parents that are more likely to take their children out of school early? Or to get out of school during term time? England, Wales, Scotland or Northern Ireland? I'll tell you in just a moment. Do you think these school summer holidays are too long? A lot of teachers, and I come from a family of teachers, both my parents were teachers, my wife was a teacher for a long time. A lot of teachers say when kids come back after summer holidays, they've forgotten how to hold a pencil. They can't remember to read. It's all gone. It's too long. And if you are in a household where both parents work, finding childcare, managing the holidays between you can be an absolute nightmare. People are taking leave to try and look after their kids during the holiday. These holiday clubs are absolutely exorbitant when it comes to the prices of them. Is it really any wonder that more and more of us take kids out early during term time to go on these holidays because you can't afford them? And what is it? What's it worth getting out of bed 4 in the morning every day to go and put your nose to the grindstone every day to pay half of it to HMRC every month if you can't spend good time with your children, particularly when they're young and they want to be around you? And if you can't do that because the cost of the holiday is too much out of term time during the allotted holidays, well, come on. Of course you're going to take them out for a bit. Now, I'm not advocating 2 weeks at a stretch. Even a week, I think, is a bit chunky. But a few days before the end of term, I think that's reasonable, I think. And it's no surprise it's happening more. 0345 6060 973. Should these school summer holidays be shorter? Are you one of those parents who takes your children out early to go on a holiday? Christine Cunliffe is principal at LVS Ascot and author of the book Transforming School Culture. Very good to see you, Christine. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. Do you think that the school summer holidays are too long?
Good morning. Yes, I do. I've thought that for many years. I think we live in a very antiquated system. Why do we have such long breaks now? We're not as if we're going out doing the harvest anymore, is it? So it's about time we change. But it's like a lot of things in education. We stand still. We talk about it every year. This is like a conversation from 10 years ago. When is it going to change?
How long should they be?
I think we should have 4 equal terms with maybe a 2-week gap in between. Possibly a little bit longer in the summer, but it might drive the holiday issue down because the prices they double, treble. Yep. You know, a lot of those price rises are in the UK and they hit the people that are on the low income. So, yep. You know, it's not fair. It's creating more social divide as well. The rich can afford to go away. They can take the hit with the fines, but people on lower incomes just can't do it.
Well, it says here nearly a quarter of parents in households earning more than 100 grand a year have taken children out to reduce the cost of the holidays. You know, if you're earning 20 grand a year as a household, there's no hope for you. I mean, you kind of have to. You're priced into taking them out if you're able to go on holiday.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've been a teacher for over 30 years and I've always had to go on school holidays. And we've got 3 children. And as they get older, you're talking 2 rooms, you're talking 5 flights, you know, it's absolutely exorbitant. And, you know, I couldn't take those time out during term time. Now, as a teacher, it can be frustrating when you've probably got 1 or 2 out of your class at any one time. But, you know, with technology now, kids catch up. Yeah. I think we're all just thinking about it too much. Let's change the system. Let's make it easier for everybody.
I'm enjoying this. People will say every day of school is absolutely critical. The education secretary, indeed, my great friend and revered radio presenter Nick Ferrari, who's normally in this chair, also toes this line, every school day is absolutely critical. Reality is, Christine, no, it isn't. It isn't.
Well, it's not. And when you look at it, so for example, I oversee 2 independent schools and we've been broken up in the one I'm actually on site today, yep, 2 weeks ago. And there's still state schools in now. And I remember having worked in the state system for 10 years before I came into independent education. Those last 3 weeks they're a slog because, you know, you're just waiting for the end to go. It's a waste of time. You can get that learning done in particular chunks of time. We just don't think smartly anymore.
So you would recommend 4 terms separated by 2 weeks in the middle?
Yeah, and maybe a little bit longer. You know, I haven't got my calculator out and I'm a music teacher, so, you know, I've got to kind of add all those things up in my head. But, you know, let's think, it's about time we did something and help parents because, you know, childcare is a huge cost. You know, and as you say, why are you getting out of bed in the morning to go to work when you're just ploughing your money back in tax and childcare? And there's no tax relief either on childcare, and there should be. Really. That's another story, though.
Wow, Christine, this is great. You should. Have you ever thought of running for office?
Oh, no.
No, don't bother with
too
that.
Too old for that.
And you don't get the long holidays.
And you don't get paid too well either. So you're not going to get paid well as a teacher, but, you know, too much for that. Yeah.
And what about the teachers for those holidays? My parents had those long summer holidays when they were teachers. And in that sense, it worked perfectly because we were on holiday, they were on holiday. There was never a problem.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, and it's not the only reason I went into teaching, I shouldn't lie, but when I got married and wanted a family, I was looking at a career where I could have a career and also look after my children. Yeah. And I remind them about that sometimes. You know, I was there for you in the holidays. You can't say that I always had to take you into clubs and stuff like that. So it's a great career if you're a teacher, but you do pay the price then of those holidays.
Really appreciate your time. Good luck with your long school summer holidays this time around. Christine Cunliffe is principal at LVS Ascot and author of the book Transforming School Culture. I think the school day itself, I agree with Christine, the school day itself it's time for some serious change there, isn't it? I don't understand why we force teenagers whose biology is so affected by their hormones that they're not ready to do anything at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's not that they're lazy. It's literally the biological changes in their body mean that they just can't get going. So why are we forcing them into register for assembly at 7:30 in the morning when they're just not in the right frame of mind to learn? I don't know. And similarly with the holidays, they're too long. And I know as a kid, I'm trying to remind my children of this now, actually. Every day when they come home, oh, we're bored, we've got nothing to do, or find something to do. It's the best time. Because you've got, there's nothing on the, there's no work, there's no responsibility, there's nothing on the horizon. It's just going outside, playing with your friends, getting on Fortnite, in some cases. It's fantastic. It's the best time of your life, these school holidays. But 6 weeks? For mum and dad to try and manage the childcare and to work and to get around, it's too long, and it's not very helpful for the child at the end of it all, because if you're not doing reading every day or you're not reading to them, they come back into school and the teachers say they've forgotten how to do it, and the first couple of weeks of school is basically catching up on where you left off at the end of the summer term. And that's not great for anybody. So I don't think any of this is working for anyone. And that's why people, parents are, I think, almost entirely within their rights to take their child out of school for a bit during term time, to go on a summer holiday that they couldn't afford during the summer holidays. And when it comes to parts of the UK that do this most, let me tell you that we're looking at you, Wales. 32% of parents in Wales who have primary school aged children take them out early. If it's a week, that's quite a long time. Couple of days, I think you're bang on doing it. And you can take the fine because you save so much money on the holiday, it's priced in. 0345 60 60 973. Are the summer school holidays just too long? Come to your thoughts on that in just a moment. Tom Swarbrick here, coming up.
I'm going to try and turn over every single stone to see if there's an answer to understand why my 14-year-old boy is not alive.
And she has. The inquest into the death of 14-year-old Jules Sweeney is going to be reopened after the original conclusion was quashed at the High Court. His mum, Ellen, will join me live next. 9:15, news headlines on LBC, Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become Labour leader later, setting him up to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. The International Monetary Fund has warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. And a man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M4 eastbound, heading towards Junction 5 at Langley. There was an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are back open now, but it's still very slow. Loads of problems in London this morning. First in Croydon, Cherry Orchard Road and the Lower Addiscombe Road are both closed following an accident. And in Marylebone, outside Baker Street Tube Station, the Marylebone Road is closed westbound, and that's following an accident. On the trains, well, these problems do continue for the Suffragette line and also the Windrush line. They are part suspended. No service on the Victoria line between Seven Sisters and Walthamstow Central, and then severe delays on the rest of the line, and also severe delays on the District and Hammersmith and City lines.
This is LBC.
Toby likes to thoroughly inspect his bananas before purchasing. He isn't sure if he really needs post office travel insurance. The thing is, holiday Toby definitely does. The Costa del Sol hasn't seen banana boat action like this since 1999. Don't worry, Toby. With 24/7 GP access abroad, Post Office Travel Insurance has Holiday You covered. Post Office Travel Insurance. Do it for Holiday You. For more information, visit postoffice.co.uk/GP. Policy terms, conditions and activity limits apply.
This is LBC.
Up to speed.
Your Formula One podcast.
Round 10 is the iconic Spa circuit in Belgium.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday on YouTube or Global Player.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement.
Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the UK's only breast cancer awareness charity for young people. We educate people on the signs of breast cancer, as when found early, treatments are more effective and survival rates higher. This is your reminder to check your boobs, chest or pecs. Learn how at copperfeel.org.
This Saturday, the £9 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
You can now get Sky, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Netflix and Hey You together in one subscription. So,
ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, take your seats on your sofas, brew your cuppers and turn your phones to silent. Because the world of ultimate entertainment is about to begin. Sit back, relax and head to sky.com to find out more.
It's starting.
Requires Sky Stream and Sky Ultimate TV subscription. Minimum broadband speed of 30 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
9:18 at the time. It is, for most people, the beginning of the school summer holidays. The suggestion is that most parents believe those school summer holidays to be far too long, that they need to be curtailed, that having these 6-7 week long holidays is damaging for the child because they don't learn, they forget everything by the time they come to school. It's incredibly strenuous on the household because you've got to manage the childcare because you're both working. It gets unbelievably expensive to do, frankly, anything. Where did we go? Chessington? Was it Chessington? I can't remember. I was working, so I didn't go either. But off they go to Chessington. Oh, my God, the amount of money that just gets flooded out of the account. And that's just half a day. That's not even a full day's, you know, activity. It gets incredibly expensive. So it's no wonder that more and more parents take their children out of school early to go on a holiday before the actual holidays begin, because you can't afford to. So none of this is working for anyone. So it's time for a radical rethink. These summer holidays are too long, a month max. Steve, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. First,
over 27 bereaved families in this country alone who have suffered the ultimate consequences and devastation of what can happen with what we know online.
An inquest into the death of a 14-year-old boy following what his mother believes was an online challenge gone wrong is to be reopened after its original conclusion was quashed at the High Court. Jules Sweeney died in 2022, and an inquest into his death in September of that year lasted 23 minutes and called no live evidence before returning a narrative conclusion. The High Court has now quashed the senior coroner of Gloucestershire's conclusion after a legal challenge from Jules's mum, Ellen, who I'm delighted to say joins me live. Thank you so much for coming on the programme. We have spoken over a number of years now, Ellen, about your absolute focus on getting the questions around your son's death answered. So congratulations to you for getting this reopened, because I think this is the first time one has been reopened. So what is now to be looked at that wasn't before?
Morning, thanks for having me on. Yes, so yesterday the High Court ruled to quash Jules' inquest, so basically making it null and void and redoing his inquest. I've always campaigned that in Jules' first inquest, they never looked at his social media and online data. Since the Online Safety Act came out in 2023, Jules died in 22, then we can use new powers through the coroner to demand social media companies hand over all of his data. So now it will go back to the senior coroner at Gloucestershire, who can then instruct the social media companies via Ofcom to release any data that may still be there of him.
Do you have much faith in the coroners in Gloucestershire to do this properly this time?
I do, actually. They have strong legal powers. They didn't have the ability there in 2022. They do now. So I have to put my faith into the senior coroner and hope that they do their job and go via Ofcom. Social media companies may, of course, have deleted some of the data. TikTok have previously said that they have. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But the coroner has the power to demand that information. And all I want is the chance to see if I can understand why my 14-year-old child's not alive.
And the background to understanding what was on his phone, critical to determining what or who was responsible for his death. Do you mind describing why that is so critical?
I think phones these days and social media play so much of teenagers' lives that we know that there's harmful material on these platforms. We know that children are fed harmful data. And I just want the chance to see, was that what happened to Jules? It was raised publicly in the High Court yesterday. We do now know, and I haven't made it public until now, but Jules was sent a link through Instagram, which the police have confirmed was from a West African organised crime gang. Wow. And that's been highlighted. I used Mick Randall from Fedora Investigations to uncover that. So we don't know if he clicked on it. If we go to Meta, they should be able to see what happened with that action, hopefully. We haven't seen his Snapchat messages. We should be able to go to Snapchat and say, what have you got? And of course, then there's the challenges from TikTok. I want to see what was fed to him.
Yeah. If they haven't got this data, what can you do?
Nothing, unfortunately. But I have to try. As a parent, losing a child is horrific.
Yeah.
But losing a child and not understanding why he's not alive is hard, and it may be that it's too late. But what yesterday's hearing did do was it was the first landmark case, so it sets precedents now for other parents. There are, unfortunately, many other bereaved parents in the same position, mm-hmm. desperate for answers to what happened to their child. So it may well help them as well going forward.
And do you have a time frame, Ellen, for how long this all might take?
I don't. It's quite interesting, actually. I don't know how long it'll take. So Jules died in April. His first inquest was in September. But I also know of other parents who are 4 years down the line and haven't finished the inquest yet.
Yeah.
I'm determined this isn't going to take 4 years and I will push this forward. But I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how quickly that we can do that. And also that social media companies now don't refuse. They could, of course, still refuse to release the information and say they don't have to abide by UK law. Hopefully they won't. They maybe jump through these hoops. I've done it. Let's see if we can get the information out.
I don't know whether congratulations are the right word because the circumstances don't call for any congratulations. But the fact that you have been able to get this reopened is testimony to how much you are searching for the truth about what happened to your son. Thank you so much for coming on and keep us informed about what's going on with it because we want to keep tabs on it. Ellen Room is the online safety campaigner. Her son Jules died at home in Cheltenham in 2022. That inquest is now reopening but may take some time. A TikTok spokesman has said, "We strictly prohibit content that promotes or encourages dangerous behaviour. We have approached Meta, who own Instagram, for comment. We'll let you know what they say." 9:25. Steve's in Maidstone. On the summer holiday, Steve. Too long?
Good morning. No, not too long. What people got to remember is that the 6 weeks during the summer holiday, the school doesn't sit empty. It will be a hive of activity. That's when all the work gets done, all the emergency light tests, the resurfacing school halls and playgrounds. But that next 6 weeks for all these schools will be constant, and they will only just get to the event. By the time it gets to the end of the 6 weeks, they'll only just finish the work that needs doing.
Right.
So, you know, we need those
that's
6 weeks
for the school.
To get all the work done.
Lovely. That's brilliant that the light bulbs get changed and the new pavement gets put in and there's a hopscotch thing. Lovely. But for 6 weeks, I mean,
what do you mean what happens to the kids? We have 6 weeks off work. We always had. It was brilliant. It's amazing.
Why
would you want to stop?
Why
do people today want to stop what we had? We had it brilliant. We knew it was wonderful. And this rubbish
Steve.
About how they can't remember how to write after 6 weeks, that's rubbish as well.
Steve.
We need those 6 weeks off. The kids love it.
Steve.
Go on.
I'm not going to argue with you about loving it. It's the best time of your life.
It's brilliant.
Except there are many circumstances in which actually it's not brilliant for the child at the end of it because they've forgotten everything when they go back into school. It's not brilliant for the parents. You have to try and manage those 6 weeks. Who has the child when? Who's
the schools
time
need that time to do the important, essential work. Otherwise,
do you do maintenance? Do you do maintenance in school?
I do, yes. Yeah, I'm not making this
so
up. I'm coming at you from...
Okay,
I
knew that there was something self-interested going on here, Steve.
Oh, no, it's not self-interest. My self-interest is my kids go back to school at the end of 6 weeks, they're in a classroom with lights that work, with a school, with a
surfaces that are clean.
Why does
that take 6 weeks? Do it in four.
We can't do it all in four. How many schools there are?
What?
There's so much work, and all these schools are very, very, most of them
hang
very,
on,
very old.
Steve, what you're describing is it's boom time for you and your colleagues doing school maintenance. You're going to be absolutely pillar to post this summer because you're going around every school doing it. Good on you, that's fantastic. But for everyone
Thank
else,
you.
This is a problem.
Well, when does it get done? Otherwise, you're sending out kids to schools that are inadequate.
There's 2 weeks in October half term.
You can't build a classroom in 2 weeks. You can't build a classroom in 2 weeks. That's what happens in these schools. You see, the schools are constantly in flux. New classrooms are built, offices are turned into classes, classes are turned into
This is not a good reason to have 6 weeks off.
Well, when does the work get done? You can't build a classroom in
places.
You can't get done in 2 weeks. You can't build a classroom in 2 weeks. Seriously, these schools are absolutely jam-packed busy. Right? How do you repaint a school?
Do you have school-aged children?
I do, yes.
Okay, so what happens to your school-aged children? I don't know how old. It depends. If they're 15, they can kind of take care of themselves. But
well, in fairness, they are of age now, yeah.
Right, and fine, okay. So you're okay. So in the early days, when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12... What are you doing? You're absolutely flying around doing the schools, maintenance, whatever.
Yeah.
What do you...
Yeah. My wife may happen to be term time.
Right. So...
We've deliberately got a job. My wife deliberately took a job that meant she could look after the kids in term time. And and our life is affected by that, financially. But we did that to look after our kids.
So you've managed it so that she's there during the holidays?
Yes.
Well, now that's...
Well, I get that. I get how easy... No, that's
a good way of managing it. But should we have a situation where a family has to do that, where they have to... If your wife wants to go out and work or you need the money coming into the household, that you have to curtail your earning capacity in order to basically provide... Not childcare, because it's looking after your own kids.
That's parenting.
Yeah, exactly. But you can parent in lots of ways, which means your children are very happy and having a lovely time, but not for 6 weeks, it's 4 weeks.
Arguably, but 4 weeks, 6 weeks, does it, you still need that time to get stuff done.
You're thinking about the school carpet again. Steve, I appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. And then on the question of taking kids out early. Now, I know that I get absolute pelters for this from various organisations, what have you, because my view, I think, is grounded in financial reality for a lot of people, which is the flights double in price, the holidays double in price. Now, you're not entitled to a holiday. We all understand that. You're not owed anything. But if you work hard all year, Steve and his wife clearly, you work really hard, you want to spend time with your children, quality time with your children, you can't do it during the school holidays because the prices have gone up too much. I do think that this notion that every single day of school is completely critical is just nonsensical. It's not true. It's the nice thing that the education secretary has to say in order to justify these kind of fines and what have you. It's not true. We all know it to be false. So taking your kids out for a couple of days, I don't see the problem, really, in the grand scheme of things. But I know a lot of people get very hot under the collar about it. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up...
Good growth in every British postcode. What a sea change that would be.
And a political sea change we are about to witness, for in the next few hours, Andy Burnham is going to be installed as Labour leader. He will be Prime Minister on Monday. Meantime, a warning from the International Monetary Fund, who many decades ago we had to go for a bailout, who say stop the spending, find some cuts, and you need to charge wealthier people for access to more NHS services. Is that a plan you would get behind? Get into the details after this. 9:30, news headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will promise to be unashamedly Labour when he takes over the party's leadership later. He'll use a speech to say he intends to fix the big things politics has neglected, although he's yet to set out his vision for government. The incoming Prime Minister is being warned that the UK can't afford any extra public spending. A report by the International Monetary Fund says Andy Burnham should instead focus on plans to grow the economy. And a man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. Police say Vahid Abari, who's 39 and from Liverpool, was arrested in the Birmingham area on Wednesday. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many. Some showers in southern England later. A high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo.
It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
This Saturday, the £9 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes, Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
9:33 the time. Here's Barry in Surrey. Tom, I've just been charged £640 for taking my two sons abroad to their elder brother's wedding. The school wouldn't authorise it. I just got a generic email saying it's not been agreed. So not even been actually considered, suggests Barry. How long are you taking it? If you've got a £640 fine, how long does that mean they've missed of school? A couple of days, fine. You know, weekend wedding. So you take them on the Friday, you bring them back on the Monday. So you miss Friday and Monday. That can't be £640. Is that because you've taken them for 2 weeks? Taff, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. Next.
I am not indisciplined when it comes to the public finances. I was in the Treasury.
Well, let's hope not, because the IMF is worried that he might be. The front page of the Telegraph has the story that the IMF is issuing a spending warning to Andy Burnham. It says the deficit must be cut, as the Prime Minister, we're told, is considering nationalising Thames Water. They say Britain cannot afford a fresh spending binge. They've called for cuts to various parts of government spending. One wonders about welfare. Cautiousness around additional borrowing. And then this, which is a pretty direct, specific intervention from the IMF, who say that richer NHS patients should pay for more services. Currently, patients typically pay a fee for things such as dentistry as well as prescription charges. The IMF has previously suggested charging higher earners to use a wider range of NHS services. The paper says this would move Britain closer to the systems used in other countries. Ireland, for instance, typically charges a fee for GP appointments. Should we follow suit? Helen Thomas is CEO of Blonde Money, an independent financial consultancy and former advisor to George Osborne. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Helen. Let's start with the warning from the IMF. Do you think Britain needs a warning?
I think so, because despite 2 years into this Labour government and prior warnings from the IMF and warnings from the bond market, you know, we're still in a very precarious position. So I think it's quite timely. This is an annual report, I should say, by the way. This isn't something unscheduled from the IMF. Yep. But I thought it was pretty stark language.
It's definitely stark, and it's definitely direct in what Britain should be doing, in a way of rather more prescriptive than perhaps we've been used to from the IMF. This idea of charging for NHS services, do you think that's an idea that needs to be debated properly now?
Yes, because I think all ideas need to be debated. and I think the IMF has gone deeper onto this because we haven't really fully gone into all these different things that are being debated, these choices that need to be made. But, you know, I was quite struck that they talked as well about the triple lock, which the OECD have talked about, which the OBR have talked about, and which I think is in the national consciousness now. You know, beyond geeks like me who have to look at economics all the time, I think, you know, that is something that the public is prepared now to consider changing.
I don't know, Helen. As someone that has attempted rather self-defeatingly to make pensions sexy on my show, and obviously, you know, if it's a day ending with Y, the triple lock tends to come up. Because it is so expensive, because it is, you know, an extra £15 billion by the end of the decade, and because there is total political consensus on this thing happening in the face of, as you say, everyone else screaming that this is unaffordable.
Well, maybe we're getting to that inflection point, and you absolutely, Tom, have been part of getting it into the debate, because the point is it's a trade-off. This is what we have to get back to. And this is what Andy Burnham, so far, he's trying to sell himself. He's tried to sell himself to his voters, to his MPs. He's getting right on the cusp of this astonishing transfer of power, this coronation out of nowhere. Now he has to try and convince the country, which is going to be a lot harder, but, you know, trade-offs have to be made.
Mm. Who do the markets want to see as Chancellor?
Well, they're, of course, astonishing in this last few days of this run-up that there appears to have been, I think, what Boris Johnson might have called a switcheroo. At least, anyway, a shift, though it had been, you know, Ed Miliband in pole position and now talk of Shabana Mahmood. Look, the market just wants somebody who is going to try to deliver productive growth without unleashing lots of borrowing. Now, the interesting thing about Shabana Mahmood is she's a bit of, we don't know her thoughts much on the economy. So although I think there's been a sense, look, Ed Miliband was a concern because he contributed to much higher energy prices. And that was a concern of bond markets who are worried about inflation. The fact it now looks not to be him, but we will still see. He will still have a big influence on this next government, of course. There's been something of a small shift of sort of sigh of relief. But, as I say, this Burnham government, you know, he said this week, you know, we'll have to ask for a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's whoever's Chancellor, that's what's going to drive this administration.
Helen, thank you very much indeed. Helen Thomas, CEO of Blonde Money. Asking for a little bit more can happen in a lot of ways. I wonder whether asking for a little bit more to use the NHS, if you're a higher rate taxpayer, it's 20 quid to see the GP. I mean, the trade-off might be that you actually get to see one within a couple of weeks, but it's 20 quid to see the GP and other services. Make them up. Other services within the NHS you're going to have to pay for if you're a higher rate taxpayer. Michael says this, oh, for God's sake, Tom, all UK governments have been terrible. Just charge 10 quid for an NHS appointment. Get on with it. Is that the kind of, you know, when Andy Burnham says we need to do politics differently? Well, so triple lock gone, NHS charges on for those who should be able to afford it. You uprate the top end of tax from 45p to 50p whilst also perhaps cutting the point at which you start paying tax or moving it up from £12,500 to £15,000, give people some relief there. Something's got to change, I'd have thought. Jack's in Chadwell Heath. Hi, Jack.
Hello there. There's a couple of things I'd like to touch on. So, first of all, perspectives. Does anyone know the facts and figures of how many traders that can't go away during the summer because we have to abide by the Health and Safety Act? We have to abide by the Workers' Rights Act and facilitate the fire regs, as well as the concept of not using your brain cell, run the opposite direction of the fire, but yet we need to have fire risk safety inspections and all the other nonsense that goes with keeping idiots alive.
I've got, Jack, I've got no idea what you're talking about.
The summer holidays and the sacrifices that traders make to be available during the summer to maintain the schools, integrity of the building, to make sure children have a safe working environment. You need that time.
Yeah, but Jack,
it can be done in 2 weeks.
But it's not a sacrifice, is it? If you want to do the work that's available on the school site and be paid for it, you're not doing it for free, and you're going to be paid for it, then you make yourself available for it. Otherwise, you go on holiday because you'd rather take a holiday. It's a choice.
Okay, and what's more important, time or money?
Well, that's up to you, sir. That's your choice. I don't take any time off during the summer holidays because I need to earn the money.
Okay, and that's your choice. But what is more valuable, time or money? Again, what's replaceable?
Again,
money's replaceable.
Yes, I agree. So now you're arguing, that you're going to take the time off? Good on you. Fine.
No. My argument now is the time spent and the sacrifices made by, like the previous caller, Steve, to accommodate the fact that he has a responsibility, a parental responsibility, which is more important than earning money and putting money into a corrupt system, you've tried to vilify it when really he's done what he's had to do.
I don't
understand. Some people have to hold back their careers to be a proactive parent.
Yes, I understand that totally. But that's not quite what I don't think that that's what you were starting off with. You were saying that it was a sacrifice that he was making to go and maintain the schools rather than take a holiday. And my point gently is, it's not a sacrifice, it's a choice.
Well, you just said you have to work during the summer because you have bills to pay.
Yeah.
That's not a choice. That's not a choice. If you have something you have to do, it's not a choice. It's forced. So
but you don't have to be the ones providing the maintenance of that school. Someone else will do it. If you won't do it, someone else will do it.
That's a lazy attitude. That's like saying, well, if you won't teach my son, someone else will.
The school holidays
are important, and taking a child out of school is, it should be down to the parent's choice, we pay into the system pay the staff to do the role,
yep.
It should be based on what the parent feels is acceptable for their child.
I don't disagree. I think we're agreeing violently on lots of things, Jack, but we're taking a while to get there. I'm sorry, but if you... There will be another construction company or another maintenance firm who the school will offer the job to if you decide you don't want to do it. And that's on you. If you want to do it, go and do it. If you need to do it, you're going to have to do it. Sacrifice seems to be the wrong word. We'll agree to disagree on that. Jack, thank you. Taff's in Cardiff. Taff.
Good morning. Lovely to speak to you. On the subject of school holidays, yeah, I'll be up front. I don't have kids, so I'm sort of, I have no skin in the game, but I've for a long time thought that, and I've obviously had friends that have exactly this issue of taking kids out of school and what have you because of the costs. Why not reduce that big block in the summer from 6 weeks to, down for argument's sake, to 4 weeks, and have those other 2 weeks as floating, that parents can book during term time. The school would have a learning pack for when they were away. Just it means that parents would be able to avoid those huge costs, and the school could then plan for that child being out. I know, perhaps it's a stupid idea. Please, then I'm sure you'll tell me if it is.
Listen, I do you know what, Taff? I don't know. I mean, you can imagine a set of circumstances in which eight of the kids choose the same week, and it all gets very difficult. Blah blah blah. But I'd just like to. What do they do in other countries? In other countries, they must have thought of this or got a better system in place, or, you know, we'll do things differently, and whether or not it's you know, there are merits and demerits to it, rather than having what we've got, which really hasn't changed since the Victorian time in terms of the school day and school term.
I have no idea. I'm sure there's someone that does it smarter than us.
I'm sure there is. But do you agree fundamentally with the point that because the school term does need some review? I mean, the boss of Ofsted says that quite regularly now.
Absolutely. It's Victorian. Yeah. It's clearly not working. So someone somewhere should look at it and come up with a better solution that works for everybody.
I would start with the school holidays, make them a bit shorter, put an extra week in at half term or whatever. And then I would look at the start time of school itself. Particularly for kids in sort of GCSE year, do we really need to get them in at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning? I don't know. They're not ready then.
I mean, there is an argument that it prepares them for the real world on that, but equally, there's an argument against it.
Taff, thank you very much indeed. It's a debate. Thank you for the call. 03456060973. Kerry, you're going to carry that debate on in a few moments' time. Not before, though, the 9:45 headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Andy Burnham will become Labour leader later, setting him up to replace Sir Keir Starmer as Prime Minister next week. The International Monetary Fund has warned the UK can't afford any extra public spending as Mr Burnham prepares to enter Downing Street. And a man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many, some showers in southern England later, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue in Croydon. Cherry Orchard Road remains closed both ways, and also the Lower Addiscombe Road also closed at the junction following an accident. Outside Baker Street, earlier this morning there was an accident, so it's closed the Marylebone Road westbound and there are queues all the way back to Euston Station. On the train, so many problems this morning. The Windrush line remains part suspended. No service between Highbury and Islington and New Cross, also to West Croydon and also Crystal Palace and Clapham Junction. The Suffragette line also can't run between Barking and Barking Riverside. The Gatwick Express isn't running at all. The entire line is suspended. It's because of a track problem and severe delays on the Victoria and Hammersmith and City lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Big speech from Andy Burnham later, who, by the time we come off air, will be the Labour leader. But I want to talk about the decision to move things north.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte.
With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
This is LBC.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
Go! Oops, sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV license covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV license together.
Choose a Wickes kitchen and choose peace of mind. Add the option of installation to your order and relax as Wickes approved installers fit your kitchen. Visit Wickes today.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the UK's only breast cancer awareness charity for young people. We educate people on the signs of breast cancer, as when found early, treatments are more effective and survival rates higher. This is your reminder to check your boobs, chest or pecs. Learn how at copperfeel.org.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £42 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's draw, Euro Millions, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
9:49 the time. Just while you've been listening to the headlines, we've gone round Europe in terms of what they do on school holidays. This is great, this. Here's Mika. Hi, Tom. Germany here. We have staggered summer school holidays by federal state. This way, summer travels and planning are a little easier and have more flow, especially on the Autobahn, says Mika in Berlin. That's very... I don't know. We couldn't do that here. So Kent takes their holiday from the 17th of July, and then Sussex go on holiday on the 24th. I don't think it would work here, unfortunately. Here's John. Tom, in Sweden, they close for 8 weeks. Most people take 4 to 6 weeks continuous holiday from work. Plus, there are lots of summer camps, activities for kids, football, handball, computer, etc. Most people in Sweden take 4 to 6 continuous weeks off work. Are they all in the civil service? Or are they all public servants of some kind? How on earth, as a self-employed person, do you take 4 to 6 weeks off work? Kerry's in Truro. Hi, Kerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think I perhaps have quite a unique take on this, maybe not. I, as a parent, today, every year, the last day of term is my absolute favourite day of the year. It's better than Christmas, it's better than birthdays. I love it. I live for the summer holidays.
It's not better than Boxing Day, but we...
It's like 6 weeks of continuous eating, like Boxing Day. It's fine. Great. pajamas, if you want to.
Sure.
As a parent, yeah. My son is 27, so from 2004, his very first ever summer holidays, the summer holidays are my favourite time, and that is my position. My position is, I think children need the 6 weeks holiday. I do love it. I love it as a parent. I love it for my children. I think it's really important. I think children need to decompress. I think they need that freedom. I don't agree that they forget how to read and write. I don't agree with that. I absolutely, you know, I live for that. As an ex-social worker, the last day of term was my absolute worst day in the whole year.
Really?
Because there were children who I knew without shadow of doubt would not eat another meal from that last day until the first day. They wouldn't eat a proper meal. So for 6 or 7 weeks, not a single cooked meal would be consumed. They wouldn't have bedtime. They would have the freedom to roam, you know, do what they want. There's no boundaries, nobody really checking on them. So I think that poses a problem. Ironically, now that my children are older and self-sufficient, I now work in education. And as an educator, I also agree with people taking their children out of school for a week's holiday. I really do. I think those students come back invigorated. I think they come back with great stories. They come back with this life experience. They're ready to learn again. But ultimately, aside from all of that, I absolutely think that children need the 6 weeks, and I think we need to stop delegating responsibility for parenting onto other services. That is my position.
Those other services being
Being education, social care, just, I feel like when I'm not in the camp of, you shouldn't have children if you can't afford them, because I accept that, you know, situations happen. Nobody can afford them.
If you waited until you could afford a child to have a child, no one would have any.
Yes, or until you had the patience, or until you didn't need the sleep, or until you, all of those things, absolutely, until you had the space, right, or until you were ready to tidy up for 23 hours a day. Absolutely agree. But yeah, exactly. So I accept that these things happen, that we don't, you know, I'm happy to say that neither of my children were planned. You've got to deal with what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. However, when you, it is an active decision to have a child once you find out that you're having a child. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to then make sure that you have resources to deal with it. I've only worked in education for a very short amount of time. So whilst my children were in school, I worked full time.
Yeah.
And what that meant is I had to take 2 weeks holiday in the summer holidays. They went to camps. They went. Mm-hmm. I farmed them out to friends. Mm-hmm. I don't have family. My mum passed away 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she was the only person that. Yeah. So I didn't have that. So when I say that, I'm not saying, oh my God, it's a breeze. It's, you know, it's great.
But it's the right thing.
But ultimately, I really, really believe it's the right thing.
Kerry, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Maybe I sound a bit miserable about it. Maybe it's all a bit too understanding the cost of everything and the value of nothing if you say their summer holidays need to be shortened, because I totally agree with Kerry about decompression. My children, they just need to sleep for about a week just to get back up to speed. Viv's in Poundbury in Dorset. Hi, Viv.
Hello. I have 3 children, but they're now in their 30s. But ever since they were at school, we used to say, why can't we have longer at Christmas? Because they get all their new toys and then they go straight back to school and they don't get a chance to play with them. But more importantly, if they had longer at Christmas and longer at Easter and then only 4 weeks or so in the summer, the school isn't paying for heating for as long and for lighting, and the schools have never got any money. I mean, it must cost them a fortune to heat a school in December when the children could be at home.
So give them 2 and a bit weeks, 3 weeks at Christmas?
Or split it between Christmas and Easter and have a bit longer at Easter.
Yeah, Easter's quite short, isn't it? It's quite a short holiday from memory.
Have, you know, maybe 3 weeks at Christmas, 3 weeks at Easter, and then 4 weeks in summer. But I just think, you know, from a financial view for the school, would they not save... I know how much it costs to heat our normal house for a week and light it. And they're paying for that, which they wouldn't be paying in the summer.
And the point earlier about, I mean, it's very nice for the children whose parents are there, who care, who have some money to spend on them, who want to give them a good time. For the children whose parents aren't interested in that or can't do that, you know, the ones for whom, as a social worker, our last caller knew that this was going to be a very, very tough few weeks for them. I don't know what you do about that, but apart from keep a very, very close... Those services need to keep an incredibly close eye on those children.
Yes, they do, but, I mean, my suggestion isn't going to help that, but because I'm still saying they have the same amount of weeks off, but maybe if the children aren't having so long off in the summer, that means at least those children aren't going without proper meals for as long as well.
Viv, appreciate it. Thank you. Here's Caroline. Tom, the French stagger their holidays by département. If not, you would not be able to access ski resorts in holiday time. Oh, no. Can't get on the slopes. I've never been skiing in my life. Anna's in Hampstead. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
In Spain?
Yeah.
What happens?
We have 3 months holidays. So kids are off from mid-June.
till mid-September.
Whoa.
Yeah, and we make it work. Yeah, I'm not sure how we make it work, but maybe if you have friends and family, lots of time with grandparents. I appreciate lots of people don't have family,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Then also because it's so long, some businesses or services like campuses and things like this don't ask you for much. So it's not too expensive.
Ah, well, there's the difference, isn't it?
Yes. Exactly. So they don't make a business out of it here because the holidays are so short. So the holidays is really expensive. Mm-hmm. The camps are so expensive. I'm lucky. I'm going to Mallorca and can leave my daughter with my parents. But because summer camps here are like hundreds of pounds.
I know. Well, we were looking at having to book ours in for a week for two of them because we're both working and everything. Blah blah blah. Blah. It's the same price as going on holiday.
Yes.
I mean, it's
yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's as expensive as going on holidays. I'm going to go to Mallorca. I'm lucky. I can live.
Wonderful.
Go there and work from home. So it works for me. And that's the same. Maybe it's all the solutions. See, what can we do with work? Maybe more working from home. Maybe it doesn't have to, this solution doesn't have to come from the school because that time off for kids is also precious.
No, totally precious. Right. And what a wonderful experience to go to a summer camp in Spain when you're on your big long holiday and meet friends and do new things. Same in the US, isn't it? There's a big culture of those summer camps. I don't know how expensive they are, but here it would cost you an arm and a leg. And I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks so much for your time today and this week. Normal service will resume Monday morning, and rightly so, because it's going to be an incredibly big day on Monday with Andy Burnham becoming Prime Minister. I'll see you at 4 o'clock on Monday for the announcement, I suspect, of the Cabinet at that point. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with the latest news, videos and opinion. Download it for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1, Sheila Fogarty. Next, James O'Brien.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Tom. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is to Andy Burnham that we turn our attention. Where do you think the pivot is? I think of Brenda in Bristol, that lovely woman whose fatigue at the prospect of another general election spoke for millions. How often does a Prime Minister have to change for you to feel a lack of excitement or a lack of engagement with what is both a historical and political milestone? I need to tell you, I'm not in that category. I still get excited about it, even though we seem to have been changing prime ministers in recent years more often than some people change their socks. So who is Andy Burnham, and what do we know about him? And top of that list at the moment would be a determination to shift things northwards. What do you think of that?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Andy Burnham will formally become the new Labour leader later, paving the way for him to become Prime Minister next week. Mr. Burnham will take both jobs without setting out his vision for the country, but he'll use a speech in London this afternoon to promise to govern in an unashamedly Labour way. Former Cabinet Minister Lord Blunkett has told LBC that Mr. Burnham must not weaken London for a greater focus on the North.
London is a country within a country, but it's an absolutely crucial part of the economic, social, cultural life of Britain. So we've got to try and balance our drive to lift the rest of the UK and to bring prosperity and hope to them, at the same time understanding the very different cultural environment in the capital.
And LBC will have full live coverage of the handover of power from Sir Keir Starmer to Andy Burnham on Monday. The incoming Prime Minister is being warned that the UK can't afford any extra public spending. The International Monetary Fund says Andy Burnham should instead focus on plans to grow the economy. It says the position of the country's finances means support for things like energy bills will have to be offset by savings. Financial analyst Catherine Brooks has told LBC it would be wise for Mr. Burnham to heed the organisation's advice.
In the past, if our debt becomes so unsustainable, they're going to be the ones that are going to bail us out. And at that point, then they can impose all the spending cuts that they want. So it's better for us to listen to them now, get our public finances on a much more sustainable track. Essentially, what they're saying is that Labour hasn't done this, the Conservatives before them hasn't done this, and now things are starting to tip over into the balance whereby we might not be on a sustainable track for our finances. So we need to do this.
A 39-year-old man has been charged under the National Security Act for allegedly assisting the Iranian intelligence service. Fahid Abari, who's from Liverpool, was arrested in the Birmingham area on Wednesday. China says it's strongly dissatisfied with the government's decision to nationalise British Steel. The firm's been bought under public ownership, having previously been owned by the Beijing-based company Jingye. China's Ministry of Commerce has said that move has dealt a severe blow to their confidence in investing in the UK. And a major part of Glasgow city centre is reopening this afternoon after a large fire destroyed a building next to Scotland's busiest railway station. Road closures have caused disruption around Union Street since March. The reopening comes 6 days before Glasgow hosts the Commonwealth Games. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 at 10,581. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine for many. Some showers in southern England by the afternoon. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. We are once again. I mean, how many years was I on air? I suppose probably until 2016, 2019, 2016. Yeah. I mean, a good decade when a changing of the guard in number 10 Downing Street was a really significant moment. I was there when Brown replaced Blair. I wasn't here when Blair came into Downing Street, when Blair replaced Major. And then, of course, I was here when Cameron replaced Brown. But that's two in 10 years. And almost bookended as well, you know, of that decade. If you took 2006, give or take, as the beginning, and 2016 as the end, it's almost bookended, isn't it? And now, I mean, one loses count of how many times it's happened and is still happening in the second decade of the last two. And I don't know what it all means. I don't know. There's a lot of chatter about whether or not the country has become ungovernable. I'm not entirely convinced by that. I think that there has been a sort of primacy or a rise of misinformation and disinformation. I sometimes forget what the difference is. Which doesn't help people casting votes. People with extremely strong opinions who don't understand anything, which reminds me, I've got some wonderful news regarding 30p Lethal for you later in the programme today. Do not let me go home without addressing that and sharing that with you. But the simple fact of the matter is that we're getting a new Prime Minister on Monday. Oh, no, not another one. And we will get another leader of the Labour Party today. Rubric and arithmetic, incredible, really, in support of Andy Burnham. And we don't currently know a lot about him. There's a lot of chitter-chatter about who his Chancellor is going to be. This worries me slightly. And I know, in a way, I'm kind of poisoning my own water supply, but political journalism is febrile by nature. I don't think it used to be quite as febrile as this, because you didn't get big events happening as regularly as they happen now. So it's as if we've become a little bit addicted to moments. Moments used to be rare. Therefore, you wouldn't be addicted to them. They'd come along and they would be exceptions that proved rules. Gosh, we're having a leadership challenge. Gosh, we're having a change of prime minister. Gosh, we're having an election. Gosh, you see what I mean? They used to be historically, they're still historically significant, but they used to be numerically rare. And I'm not a political journalist. I don't have to be. I don't have to hang out with politicians. I don't have to cultivate their goodwill or secure and retain access. I don't have to have dinners and lunches with them in the hope that they might feed me a little nugget of information. I've got enormous respect for some of the people who do that for a living. Rather less respect for the people who just take dictation from liars. But they are all now addicted to moments, addicted to excitement, because they have had so much of it since, pretty much since David Cameron called the referendum, and certainly since the referendum result came in. We just have moments that would once have been rare and therefore immense unfolding on a relatively regular basis, and we don't necessarily know what to do with it. But I still find myself cognizant of the significance of this moment. A new Labour leader, a new Prime Minister, and a new programme, a new approach. We'll hear a little bit about it later. Do stay tuned for that. Andy Burnham due to give a speech in the final hour of this programme, in the first half of the final hour of this programme. And on Monday, we'll hear rather more from him, I imagine, when he assumes the position behind the sainted lectern on the street, on the tarmac outside number 10 Downing Street. So what do we know so far? We know that he is going to impress upon the nation and, as far as we can tell, put his money where his mouth is, in other words, deploy actions as well as words. He thinks it's very important to shift focus and perhaps also power away from London. I just want to let that settle in your mind for a moment. The new Prime Minister thinks it's very important to shift focus and power away from London. And bad news for Cornwall, he's heading north. He is moving things north. He wants to have elements of the Downing Street operation based not in London but in Manchester. And by moving that focus and that power, he also moves focus. The country is, he would argue, unbalanced, and he is trying to level the scales. I find this utterly fascinating. I'm slightly odd in many ways, as you know, but I am particularly odd when it comes to London. The love I have for this city, despite not having been born here or having grown up here or even visited here very often when I was growing up, I think I could count on one hand. I'll tell you what a rarity it was for us to visit London. I once got stuck in the old-fashioned lifts at Covent Garden. I was so unfamiliar with the way in which they opened and closed. So I was absolutely a country mouse.